other. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Thank you for joining us on this Monday, October 13th, 2008 edition. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours, coming up in 30 minutes. We have a Mr. Engdahl joining us to go over what's happening in the world markets as the New World Order banking system, as the international banks are calling it themselves, use the crises they have engineered to consolidate power and control. So we're going to be going over that today. Bob Dacey joins us again in studio. I had so much fun with him last week. I wanted to have him back again with us. Money markets ease on unlimited dollars pledge. That's the CNBC headline. Unlimited dollar pledge worldwide to finance basically any select bank, brokerage firm, private corporations, sub-states of countries, including the 50 states here in the United States. Money markets ease on unlimited dollars pledge. That means hyperinflation. Dow bounces more than 400 points. It's almost 500 as we speak. After cash infusion, Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 400 points or 5% within the first few minutes of trading, and has been right around that for the last 2.5 hours since it opened. Global markets are giving a nod of approval to what the governments, central banks, and the U.S. Treasury are doing to boost confidence in the market. Well, no, that's not what's happening. They're just pumping money into it, so of course it's going up. Bailout Architect is selecting managers now to hand out the $700-plus billion. U.S. officials said to offer protection to Japan's investors, not just banks. Dollar, euro, sterling may be destroyed by Zimbabwe-style inflation. Story by Paul Joseph Watson. We'll be getting into that report. UK bails out three more major banks, calls it nationalization, $64 billion just today alone. A wave of mergers could hit banking sector as the central banks consolidate their hold and grasp. And again, we see this new economic order, which is not a new economic order. It's the same private families that own the world central banks basically taking over right now. And Bloomberg is reporting on that. That is just some of what we're going to be covering today on the financial front. On the police state front, I mentioned some of this on my Sunday show, but we need to get back into it today. And we're going to do that. I have never seen so much alternative media and even mainstream media finally looking at the martial law control grid, the cashless society control grid, the Pentagon-designed tracking and tracing system that's been put in. But the left is panicking, and I want to get her on this week, Naomi Wolf, and of course the Democracy Now! Head, Amy Goodman. They think that all this martial law is transitory and only about George Bush, and then it will supposedly, I guess, fade away after he leaves office. So they think in the next 20-something days that martial law may be declared. Hey, martial law was declared decades ago in the markets. They declare a new emergency each year. That's how the executive operates outside the legislative and judicial. When you have the Congress a week and a half ago being threatened with martial law, and that the president would just do it anyways if they didn't pass the banker empowerment takeover bill, that is martial law. So we'll be going over that today, and the media is trying to frame this as if we don't have hot martial law in the streets like Red Dawn everywhere with troops parachuting out of the skies and putting everybody at gunpoint, that it isn't martial law. No, it's incremental. Training you to accept troops on the streets. Newscasts all over the country going, oh, the regular army's working with our local police. Oh, they're helping. It's about that acclimation. So we'll break down what's really happening there. Tie it in with the license plate scanning system, scanning everything, everywhere you go, already putting you in a database. All movements already tracked and recorded. The military rolling out high-powered microwave guns to be used in the American people. Local police departments to get the systems. People being arrested for having a brown lawn. This is the type of news we'll be covering today. Stay with us.
There is no other power greater than the power over money, the power to create and contract the money supply, the power to control the purchasing power of your money. Throughout history, this has proven to be the most sought-after monopolistic power of man. It has become more sophisticated over the decades and over the centuries, more sophisticated now and more international in scope than ever before. So I see the issue of power and the control over money as being something that we cannot ignore, we must address. I believe closely associated with this is the issue of morality as well. By what moral right do we have to create purchasing power out of thin air? Whether it's done by the creation of credit or Federal Reserve notes, or whether it's the creation of SDRs in an international scope, by what right do they do this? Is it any more moral to dilute the value of your purchasing power with the money you hold in your wallet than it is for the farmer to dilute the milk supply with water? I would say there's an issue of morality here just as strong as the issue of power. I also happen to believe also because it's a moral issue more than an economic issue. It is for this reason that the people have lost trust in their government, trust in the banks, trust in business, trust in themselves, and that we are a nation of distrust. And it's for this reason I believe that until we restore trust in government, trust in the system, and trust in the money, there will be no resolution of this problem. It is the issue of trust in people and trust in money that must come before you can start talking about nickeling and diming it, trying to get back to a balanced budget, because that certainly hasn't worked. So I think it's important to address the issue of central planning, the issue of power, and third, I think that we must address in general terms the issue of the origin of money. I know that's been talked about, and we recognize, those of us who believe in commodity money, clearly understand that money, paper money, and credit creation didn't come out of the marketplace. That came out of the heads and the fantasies of the intellectuals and the government officials of those who want paper to be money, but never out of the marketplace. So I would say the paper standard is bucking history, and it's bucking economic law and economic truth, and they only can do it with force and more power to make people accept it. Because economically and historically, paper is not money. It can't be money. It's only money because we're forced to use it and because there's a residual trust in the pieces of paper that we carried around, because at one time it did have real value. You have to have something that people seek after and they hold as something important and something that they will hold as money. History shows that people have chosen gold first and probably silver second. They'd rather have cigarettes than pieces of paper.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
That was Congressman Ron Paul 30 years ago to this month. 30 years ago, laying out what the private Federal Reserve was engineering. Before I get into what's happening in the markets right now and the open announcement that they're going to totally devalue the dollar over the next 2 years, that's what the announcements mean, I want to play you a clip from Ron Paul last night on MSNBC. This is Ron Paul talking about how the banks are basically setting up, Friday night, talking about how the central bankers are setting up a world government system. And that's what it's being called, a world government of and by the private central banks that have always been organizing this global corporate state that will act as the receivership arm for the world's economy. And then they will have a militarized world government army that then protects and owns the system. So here is that clip with Ron Paul, not 30 years ago, but 3 days ago.
What did you think of it? Well, I think it's more of the same. How can you buy up equities with debt? They don't have any money. They just create the money out of thin air. They talk about recapitalization, and they're using debt. Capital in the capitalist system comes from savings. We have zero savings. That's how we got into this problem. But to just spend another $700 billion or whatever and claim you can buy up illiquid assets, illiquid assets are worthless assets is what they are. So this will do nothing more than just show how panicked they are. Every time they announce one of these, the markets realize that they're just thrashing about, and they panic, and they sell their stocks because they don't know what the devil they're doing. They're socializing the entire financial system.
Is it that far, Ron Paul? Is it the fact that they are putting a little bit of U.S. capital or taxpayer money into helping out, providing liquidity to the banks?
Stop right there.
Is it that or...
John, a little bit of money? $5 trillion is what is in that banker takeover bill? On record, Bloomberg and other publications have rightly said at least $5 trillion. It could be as high as $10 trillion, but $5 trillion is conservative. That's what's spelled out in there. And unlimited powers for this small inner group of international banks. And then the point gets brought up, you know, is this a conspiracy? Are they taking over other banks? And that is exactly what is happening. Here it is.
Is it that, or do you really suspect that there's something bigger afoot here? I mean, do you think there's a conspiracy to take over all the banks?
Well, no, they just have a plan. They believe in socialism,
Stop right there. Back it up about 20 seconds to that guy's stupid statement about a little bit of money. Number one, it's not a little bit. It will devalue the currency. We've already had about half the currency devalued in the last 7 years. They're talking about devaluing the rest of it. Understand, the dollar has lost 99% of its value since the private banks took over in 1913. So all we have is that 1% of its value that's left. That's the current value. Okay? And around half of the devaluation has just happened in the last 7 years. So it took from 1913 up until 2008 to devalue the currency up to the point that we've got. And most of that's happened in the last 7 years. Now they're talking about devaluing it the rest of the way in the next 2 to 3 years maximum. I mean, that's the facts. There's no getting around it. They are killing the currency and setting up the global government that will create a new world currency, which will be regionalized. You'll still have, say, U.S., it'll still say British, it'll still say French, just like the euro, but it is going to be global. All right, let's go back to the clip. And I love how Ron Paul says, no, it's not a conspiracy, it's a plan. It's a stated public plan. Here it is.
Is it that, or do you really suspect that there's something bigger afoot here? I mean, do you think there's a conspiracy to take over all the banks?
Well, no, they just have a plan. They believe in socialism, and I don't. But I think there is something very, very big going on. I think this is the end of a monetary system that started in 1971, and it has allowed the dollar to be king, and the dollar hegemony is ending. And they're rushing. Everybody's interest is propping up the system because everybody holds dollars. That's what's in the reserves. So they're frantically trying to get together, and that's why this is becoming international. And boy, I'm worried about this weekend. What are they going to come up with? They're going to come up with a new idea, probably one central bank for the world. So this is not good. And they take this and they build up the panic and build up the fear to do terrible things. They do it in foreign policy. They do it after 9/11 to undermine our system, undermine our freedoms. And now they're going to take over all private ownership. Why don't they allow the correction to occur? Why don't there's bad debt out there, and you can't prop up bad debt. They're doing exactly what we did in the Depression. Keep the prices high. The prices of houses have to come down, and we don't need to stimulate housing. They talk about stimulating housing, keep prices of housing up. It's the worst thing in the world to do. That was like keeping farm products high during the Depression by plowing crops under. I don't think we've learned a thing from the Depression because we have no confidence or understanding how the capitalist system is supposed to work.
Absolutely, and the free market system is being blamed for all of this when insider corruption and collusion with the government and the collusion of a select group of money masters have set up a system where they need to wreck economies. They need to get people in debt so that they can get control of the entire financial system, not just the central areas of the financial system. And that is exactly what was proposed this weekend. They've been proposing it for months publicly, for years, in high-level economic white papers in between governments. You have the private banks, the central banks of Europe and the United States, owned by the same group of families. And those families are all intermarried. And look, up on the Corbett report on YouTube, I've asked listeners to do this, and he's one of the few that's done it, and we appreciate it. He went back and he found a show we did in March of last year, so about a year and a half ago, where in 2 minutes and 30 seconds on my radio show, I was asked by a caller to lay out basically what was going to happen and what was happening, and what did I say? I said, you've got private central banks that need to wreck economies so they can consolidate them. And then I explained how they go in and get control of nations, then they have the nations get into deep debt. They create all these leveraged derivatives. The elite goes out and buys real assets with it, and then they get positioned into safe areas. Then they start blowing out the Ponzi scheme and trick the governments and the public into believing that if the people don't fully sign on to the imploding debt bubble, that they'll be bankrupted, when in truth they're signing on to be indentured servants. And then I talked about how they then use a militarized police state to maintain that control. Everything you're now seeing unfold. Now, again, it's not like I'm smart or that I'm some genius. I have world history. I have current history. I have seen what the IMF and World Bank have done for these private banking families. That's their front in hundreds of third world nations over and over again in the same nations, from Nigeria to Argentina to Brazil to Japan, for that matter. And they do this, and the 1929 implosion that went on for a decade was engineered. And we were in much better off individually at that point, and 7 million people starved to death. So it is just horrible to see the authors of all of this financially terrorizing the markets. What they're saying and doing is just what is driving them down. And then they get to pose as the saviors, and they'll pump the market up for, you know, a few days, a few weeks, and then plunge it even further once they get the new powers they want. We'll be right back.
Pienso que un sueño parecido no volverá más. Y me pintaba las manos y la cara de azul. Y de provisa el viento rápida me llevó. Y me hizo volar en el cielo infinito. Volaré.
Oh. We are back live. Thank you for joining us. The websites are prisonplanet.com. PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com, Infowars.net, TruthNews.us, JonesReport.com. We do that so when we get hacked and attacked and other things happen, we some of the sites stay up. By the grace of God and the great work of the folks that are here at Infowars.com, the overall operation. Okay, we have William F. Engdahl, author, researcher, economist, joining us, historian, coming up in the next segment for an hour, then Bob Dacey in studio in the last hour today. Open phones later, but I wanted to play about 2 minutes from a March 30th radio show a year and a half ago, where a listener was asking me basically how this operation works, and I spewed it out in 2 minutes, and what do you see happening a year and a half later? Here you go.
Here's how it works. They come into a nation, a Western nation, to get a funding mechanism and a military enforcement arm like England, Germany, France, the U.S. They come in and they lobby. We're going to have a great new society. We're going to take care of everybody. We're going to have welfare and build man up. We go, great. We're going to vote for big government and pay a lot of taxes to do this because it sounds wonderful and we want to share. They do dull some of that out for a while. Some good things happen, some bad things happen. The point is now it's created the trough. Then the global corporations come in. They're lobbying to take over the government the whole time to get most of that money that's being paid in taxes given to them in investments, which they then take and use to buy off and pay off and blow out third world economies. They then, over the last 50 years, get control of the third world as a kind of camouflage neo-imperialism. They then mass that wealth, use it to totally buy off the Western governments. They then basically drive up the debt of those nations in debt now owed to those very private banking institutions and governments that were already taken over, in many cases hundreds of years ago. See, I said this is simple. It's not. And they then take all of that wealth that they now have offshore, where they never have to pay tax, but then they manipulate our government to actually raise taxes and toll roads and all these other ways of getting fees to then conduit more and more to themselves. And in the final phase, they come in and pay off the government to have the government actually write laws to cede government power into these multinational corporations, many of which are bigger than some of the largest nations in their GDP. And then they hire private intelligence agencies, private mercenary armies like De Beers with the diamonds. And so you have this world government run by these untouchable elites whose wealth is offshore, and then they basically just play nation states off against each other in globalization and economic warfare to have a domino effect to take over the next, and they end up truly being world rulers through the financial system.
That's a pretty succinct description of...
All right, so, and folks, if listeners, because I don't have the staff to do this, if listeners, because this is important for those out there that aren't aware that we're right. They'll just hear us today breaking down what's happening and telling people what's going to happen next, and then, just chalk it up that we're Monday morning quarterbacking or backseat driving. But if people will go out and find the hundreds of interviews and hundreds of clips where I, in even more detail, lay out exactly what was going to happen. You can go back 2.5 years ago when reporting live from Bilderberg. It's of course, in Endgame and in the extras and in articles we wrote. But it's more important to even go find those radio shows where I lay out everything that was going to happen, how they were going to start the implosion in the subprime mortgage. I know that Daniel Estulin at the time was also on the radio show saying that from his sources, so that we can then put this out to the public and say, see, who could have told you 2.5 years ago it was all going to start in the subprime mortgages? Who could have told you governmental power was going to be given to the central banks of the world in a new global system? Now, we knew that, of course, in the mid-70s from the Trilateral Commission documents, but the point is the public doesn't read those. We need to educate the people. We need to show them that this is engineered by design. Now, the good news is the public predominantly now knows it's a staged event. They just don't have all the details. That's why you have 1,000-to-1 phone calls against the banker takeover bill, known as the banker bailout. But the problem is they didn't care. The White House told Congress, we'll just declare martial law and do it anyways. And McCain came out on TV, remember, and said, oh, well, the White House and the Treasury have their own powers to do this and you know, inject all this capital into the markets. It's just amazing to see this happening. All right, I'm going to come back, give you the latest market numbers, then go to William F. Engdahl, our guest for the next hour. This is the GCN Radio Network. I am Alex Jones, your host. And we will continue to break this down. In fact, when we get back, I'm just going to briefly tell you what I believe is going to happen in the markets the next 2 weeks, the next month, the next 6 months, the next year. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. After World War II, the private banking families that owned the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England, the British Empire via stealth, according to Carol Quigley and, of course, Cecil Rhodes and others, Lord Milner, who set all this up. Quigley just reported on it as their official historian. They needed the OECD to become a global banking system so there are, quote, no safe havens. So one country doesn't have more fractional reserve banking than the other. One nation doesn't have lower taxes than the other. So that, quote, investment and money doesn't flee. That's a big part of the New World Order. Also, they can then have a double set of rules. The inner elite can do whatever they want. The general public are surveilled slaves. And that's why right now they have the private banking families, less than 20 families that own most of the stock in the private central banks, trying to unify things. There are some splits, though, at least on the surface, and we're going to be discussing that. Remember, last week I predicted that the stock market would, in the next few weeks, rise up a little bit, but not gain everything that it lost. That's why they sell the public. That's why they sell the public on OC, pumping all this money in, devaluing the dollar. That's a good thing. And then down the road, they know our memories are very short. Remember a year ago, they pumped in hundreds of billions and said that would fix it. And then 6 months ago, hundreds of billions. Then a month ago, hundreds of billions. And unlimited power they've given themselves. And always it's going to be okay. And then they plunge it down even further, training the public that when the market finally really falls, and I'm talking down to, you know, 3,000-4,000 points, the suckers, the mom and pops, will stay in. Meanwhile, the elites for 5 years have been moving out of the stock market, moving into raw materials, moving into infrastructure, moving into commodities. And then in their own financial publications, like the Financial Times of London a year and a half ago, they said the question is, can the elite have an organized gradual implosion into third world serfdom for the planet with them ruling it, or have they created a debt black hole so big it may even destroy them? So that's the issue here. William F. Ingdahl, author, researcher, journalist, joins us from Germany, and we really appreciate him coming on with us. Has a great record of predicting things and a multifaceted understanding of this whole global system. And later in the interview, we'll get into the overall eugenics plan. We had him on a few weeks ago covering that, but ran out of time. But we're going to go ahead right now and break down what's currently happening and who he believes is behind this implosion. Mr. Ingdahl, thanks for coming on with us.
Well, thank you for having me again, Alex.
You bet. It's good to have you here. Okay, well, what's happening?
What I see going on, and this I wrote about 3.5 years ago already, there was too much deliberate support of this from the get-go by Alan Greenspan when he was chairman of the Fed. Of course, the Federal Reserve is the traffic cop for the U.S. financial system, the largest in the world in the post-war period, the traffic cop, and he represents the overall interests of the financial sector as a whole so that no one member gets too far out of line and destroys it for the others. However, Greenspan backed this securitization revolution from the early years of this decade, and speech after speech he promoted it. He did everything in his power to support the repeal of Glass-Steagall in 99 when Clinton signed the law that Phil Gramm and others drafted. And the New York banks after that went on a rampage securitizing everything that moved, ultimately. Now, what's emerged with the bringing down of Henry Paulson to become Secretary of Treasury in 2006 is an operation that is being run to all intents and purposes from top to bottom by a tight-knit network that has the name Goldman Sachs alumni. Not only is Paulson the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, the 35-year-old chap that he chose to administer the largest fund in the history of world capitalism, the $700 billion-plus fund that he's just been voted by a labile Congress, terrified out of their wits maybe, is a man who came from, guess where, Goldman Sachs. His name is, of all things, Cash Carry, like cash and carry. You pay up the cash, Mr. Taxpayer, and I'll carry it right up to Wall Street.
And I don't normally judge a book by its cover, but he comes right out of Dr. Doom or Lex Luthor central casting.
Well, that may be also, but the fact that a 35-year-old, relatively unexperienced Wall Street man is drafting the most complicated bailout package in financial history is alone reason to be suspect. The response.
Well, we know he isn't. We know Paulson can't quote run it himself, so yeah. He has his favorite deputy, who, according to the press, for years is always at his side and his personal legate, his personal gopher.
Okay. There's probably a much nastier story behind that, but the details are yet to come fully out. I'm sure we'll get them in the course of time. But the way that this series of crises was run stinks to high heaven of an engineered job, and I think the tip off to the whole thing was a testimony of Richard Fuld, the failed chairman of Lehman Brothers, where the congressman chose to focus on how much bonus pay Richard Fuld got over the last 10 years, which which was a red herring and a half, and not to focus on why it was that only one financial institution of a major size was allowed by Paulson to go under, and that was Lehman Brothers. The entire subsequent financial tsunami, as I call it, that was unleashed around the world, from Japanese banks to European banks and so forth, goes directly back to the letting go of Lehman Brothers, that the government didn't bail it out. At the same time, they were bailing out in a private meeting with the chairman of Goldman Sachs and the heads of AIG and the New York Fed and Paulson. They bailed out AIG.
That's right. They're not stupid. When they run around talking about depression, they know that's going to kill markets. When they let the first big one go under, they knew what was going to happen. They allowed this to unfold.
Yes, absolutely clear to me. And what they're trying to do in all this unwinding of hedge fund positions in the stock market is really an epiphenomenon of the whole process, but it gathers headlines and scares people to death so that they vote up legislation and powers that it's the financial equivalent of Homeland Security or Patriot Act is what Paulson got in this new legislation.
Financial dictatorship.
It's certainly going on down that road if the Congress continues to allow it. But what I think is going on is that Paulson and company, let's call it the cabal or the cronies, they thought that through this they could terrify the European governments into falling in line and agreeing to a de facto next step in a global money arrangement that would be, as Kissinger said back in the 70s, you control oil, you control whole nations, control food, you control the people, you control money, you control the whole world. And that is where this elite has been trying to push things since Bretton Woods in 1944. I think personally, as things look now, and I'm subject to change on this, as everybody, but I think personally they've gone a bridge too far in this securitization debacle and the way it's unfolded. The Bundesbank, the Central Bank of Germany, a bank that was reckoned to be out of business about 10 years ago, the new head of the Bundesbank, Alex Weber, it turns out to be a very, very tough-minded individual who understands the basics about banking and economy. And he said, look, this Paulson plan is a bailout for the financial system, and I'm not going to allow that. He told the German chancellor and the German finance minister, we have to take equity stakes in the banks and control how they're run so that they're not proliferating more of these toxic waste experiments. And that was in contrast to the approach of Sarkozy, the president of France, and, of course, Berlusconi, the billionaire, unsavory prime minister of Italy who wants German taxpayer monies to bail out insolvent Italian
banks. Yeah, the former
banks.
President, fascist. Now, so that's one set that some of Europe wants. On the other side, to detail the financial architecture that Goldman Sachs as the receivership for the Anglo-American side, they want specifically to be able to use their regulators and use public money to go in and take over banks.
Yeah.
So when we hear that it's a nationalization, here it's really a reverse of that. It's a private intergroup acting as government with a sort of privatization of select areas of the financial system they want at the expense not just of Main Street and the people, but of the rest of the financial sector.
Yeah, it's the British East India Company model, the people who ran the opium wars against China in the 1840s. And the public pays the cost, they bear the risk, they finance the armies to enforce the territorial grabs of the East India Company, and that's exactly what Paulson is doing with this tight cabal that's emerging. The winners are, guess, surprise, surprise, is Citigroup, one of the most insolvent banks in the world, J.P. Morgan Chase, who has more derivatives probably than any other bank on the face of the earth, and J.P. Morgan Chase,
trillion.
And Goldman Sachs. Those three, these are the giants that are going to emerge, and as you point out, Alex, the Standard & Poor's, Moody's Investor Service, the rating agencies who ought to be in the docket in Congress and facing jail terms for the criminal misbehavior that they're complicit in, by some estimates. The entire regulatory system, the SEC, the right up and down the line, is all being retooled into a leaner and meaner group of global giants that's going to try to continue this. I think, however, that they have miscalculated. The elites who
have bitten off more than they can chew.
I think so. That's my sense on it. That they the world isn't this time falling in lockstep. That you know, you can control a country. That's possible. I can admit that. Hitler did it in Germany. Mussolini in Italy. Many tin pot dictators have come up over the centuries and done that for a period, but only a period. But you can't control the entire world. And I think the old adage, whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. Well, I think there's some pretty mad people running on the loose in Washington these days who probably ought to be institutionalized for their own good and the good of the world.
Well, there's certainly a lot of hubris going on, and I think that's illustrated by Kashkari, the 35-year-old special friend of Hank Paulson, who literally is always at his side. They thought he was Secret Service the last 2 years, because he's literally always at side of his lord there, Mr. Paulson. I mean, they could have gotten somebody else from outside Goldman Sachs who was still part of their inner crew, but they didn't, because they don't care. The hubris is just oozing out of their pores.
Yeah, they think they're the gods of Mount Olympus, and they don't need to bother about what commoners think. But, Paulson has an interesting political career. He's cut his political teeth under a man named John Ehrlichman in the Nixon White House, you know, the guy who ran the whole Watergate operation, the plumber's unit, and talked about letting people hang until they twist in the wind.
Yeah, it's an intelligence operation.
Paulson managed to get out of that unscathed and start his career at Goldman Sachs. And now he's running the financial power of the privatized U.S. financial system with the open government check without any checks and balances.
We're talking to William F. Engdahl. William, plug some of your books on your website.
Well, the a lot of this financial history is actually taken up in the book. A lot of people think it's an oil book, but it's not. It's a book about geopolitics and the history of the last century called A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics and the New World Order, where I go into that interface between banking, oil, energy control, and the military control of the Anglo-American elites over the past 100 years. A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics. The second book I've done and published is part of a trilogy, keys off of the famous quote that I mentioned earlier from Henry Kissinger back in the 70s, control the oil, you control whole nations or regions, control the food, you control the people. And that's a book about genetically modified organisms, GMO, and the fact that the entire project of agribusiness that was started at Harvard Business School in the 1950s with money from the Rockefeller Foundation links into the project of GMO. It's about controlling the seeds for the human food chain on this planet so that certain elites can decide which races they want to systematically cull.
And the incredible part is it's all on record. Fire out your website.
Yeah, it's www.engdahlgeopolitics, one word, engdahlgeopolitics, period between the two, engdahl.oilgeopolitics.net.
Or just Google William Engdahl, E-N-G-D-A-H.
Yeah, F. William Engdahl on the Google, and you'll get it
okay.
Right away.
We're about to break, but literally, humans act the same, elites behave the same, just on a wider scale today. He that knows the past knows the present and can look into the future. And that's what we do here. We tie everything together with the past, the present, and the future, as you know, anybody trying to project the lines and articulate well where things are going, and people that ignore that do it at their own peril. In the couple minutes we've got left before break, you know, separately, because I've read some of your papers but hadn't read your books, you know, separately I can have you on or so many other guests who don't even know each other. We articulate the same thing about the Anglo-American establishment. Even people on the enemy side who are fans of this, you know, admit what they've done in many books. This Anglo-American establishment, the Dutch and the British East India Company, the later merging, you know, all of this, the way they went into India created black markets to corrupt the local authorities, to play them off against each other, to create crime as a pretext to bring in imperial police, breaking up China 150 years ago into 10 or 11 parts by bringing in opium, taking control of the police and the gangs. You look at the U.S., with the phony drug war, then the staged terror attacks, then the economic collapse. They do the same thing. They have handbooks on it, and they're doing it now to the West, and they're not playing games. This is a systematic British imperial stratagem of bringing down nations and then putting in imperial fronts. So let's give people that that snapshot, because I probably read 20 books on the British East India Company, and it's all so thrilling that I'm literally, that's the one area of history I've really studied, that and British naval history. You can't put it down. So let's talk now and come back from break about the stratagem in taking down the Chinese, taking down India, that's been exported to hundreds of nations.
Yeah, will do.
Let's go ahead and start now, then we'll go to break, and then we'll come back.
Okay, well, as you point out, Alex, the East India model, and I've studied quite a bit about that historically. I'm an economic historian by concentration, and that model is really more and more the model of what emerged in the United States after the 1960s and the 1970s. So the American elites studied their British cousins very, very closely and realized this is the way to go.
When we get back, William F. Engdahl, our guest, we'll break that down. Then we'll get into where he thinks these markets are going in the future, part of this plan, how he thinks this fissure in the elite is going to play out with our guest.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Journalist, economic historian, author William F. Engdahl is our guest. Okay, William, for people that are tuning in, I want to repeat, why do you care about how the British Empire controlled India? Why do you care about how Europe, England, the United States took down China? Because they're doing the exact same thing. This is a plan, and we have the recent documents out of the IMF, World Bank, Trilateral Commission, Club of Rome. They are singing from the same sheet of music. Continue, sir.
Well, basically the East India model, let's take the Opium Wars in the 1840s. The British trading families back home in London, the ones who owned stock in the East India Company that ran India during the early 1800s and the century before that, they essentially used opium as a way to bust open the resistance of the Chinese emperor to free trade with the British. And the Americans got in that. Some of the oldest, most distinguished families of Boston and New England were running opium ships parallel with the British into China in the 1840s. And they used bribery, they used corruption of customs officials, military people. They got most of the people along the coastal cities from Canton and so forth hooked on opium. And once they got hooked on opium, of course, the fighting spirit of your army, if your leading officers are opium addicts, you've got a pretty bad army. And that's exactly what happened. Then this private company, the East India Company, engineered an incident where a British ship was shot on. They used a provocation. And then they called back home to London. In fact, Jardine and Matheson actually went from India back to London and started agitation with their friends in the controlled British media about how the Chinese are violating the sovereignty of English ships at sea and so forth and have to be taught a lesson. So the British Royal Navy, the government, came in and not only bailed out this private company, the East India Company. 60 million Chinese by the end of the 1860s were identified and estimated as opium addicts because of the East India Company assault on China. To this day, the Chinese still have a traumatic shock, a cultural shock over this experience. So,
and the phony drug war was used to corrupt the police region by region to get them on the payroll. Again, by creating a black market, which they controlled, they were able to take over the nation.
Yeah, well, if this sounds a little bit like Miami Vice, I think it's purely intentional, because as you pointed out, go back to one of my favorite books about the Vietnam era is called The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia by Alfred McCoy. And he actually put together the documentation and so forth about how the CIA, Air America, Nugenhand Bank in Australia were absolutely up to their ears in running narcotics out of Vietnam into the West to get money for various black bag operations that they were doing off budget. Well, what happened parallel with that? The United States in the ghettos in the Hispanic and black neighborhoods all over America, you have an explosion of drug addiction, flooding the country with drugs. And then the next wave came out of Colombia.
Crack cocaine, the 1980s, cocaine. CIA, yeah.
And, it was documented in a series in the Los Angeles Press about 8 or 10 years ago that the CIA was up to their ears in that one. Well, Oliver North and the whole business with the Enterprise, the Iran-Contra affair, that was, drugs were all over that thing in Central America, the so-called Contras. And
then the general public will accept a police state in the name of fighting the drugs that energize the gangs and cause a breakdown of society, now being seen in the United States and Mexico, as they carry out the same operation here. William F. Engdahl, back in 70 seconds.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
How do you sell the public on accepting spies in every community? How do you get the public to somewhat accept or at least believe there's an excuse for training the children in the public and private schools to spy on their parents? Drugs. You ship in heroin and cocaine. You gain control of the police departments. You gain control of the major drug cartels. You launder the money. It gives you an ace in the hole, not just through your fractional reserve banking, but through the black market money. Then you stage terror attacks as a pretext to openly set up a military dictatorship. Then you engineer an economic collapse so you can then bring the nation to its knees and fully consolidate. Economic historian William F. Engdahl is our guest for another 30 minutes, and we've been getting into the British East India Company, what happened in India, what happened in China, how they brought those countries down, how they subdivided it into different sectors. This is globalism. International crime syndicate operating internationally, destroying all sovereign nations and hurting the people in the process. Sir, continue.
Yeah. If we look to one of the main ostensible targets in the war on terror that was declared public enemy shortly after September 2001, that's Afghanistan, and the man who was brought in, handpicked, a CIA asset for at least the last 25 years, Hamid Karzai, as president of Afghanistan, he was brought in by a former member of the National Security Council under Bush Cheney, Khalilzad, and this is an Afghan American who is probably one of the least known and most dangerous people in the entire Bush Cheney arena. But he's the case officer for Iraq. He was special envoy of the president to Iraq, and he's the case officer for Afghanistan. Well, Karzai, it just came out in documents that were revealed by the New York Times. This isn't some conspiracy theory. This is the official documents.
His family's running the opium, and opium production's up 800%.
Yeah, exactly. You took. And the Karzai family, this is known Afghani exiles whom I asked 3.5-4 years ago in Europe. I said, what's your estimation of this fellow Karzai? He said, well, he's the opium boss of Afghanistan. This is well known.
Not only the Unocol executive. So this is just out in the open. And when you hear about our troops raiding opium fields, that's the few pockets that aren't controlled by Karzai. So the only war over there is a war over opium, just like what we have, a war over cocaine in Colombia right now.
Yeah. And the how many billions of dollars does the U.S. taxpayer pay for this mess in Colombia? Uribe is essentially a puppet of the Washington administration, dependent on it for billions of dollars of military aid and so forth. So we've militarized a narco-democracy, in effect, in Colombia, and to make sure that the supply lines, in effect, are protected to feed that poison into Mexico and from Mexico into the United States and destroy... You know, destroy a whole generation.
And Mexico's having 50 drug-related murders a day. It's spilling into the United States, and the public's calling for a police state to save us.
Yeah. Well, that's the predictable response, and that plays beautifully, I think, into the hands of where the power elites want this thing to go. The signs of a police state lockdown in the United States at the slightest provocation are getting so... stark that it makes your hair stand on end if you have any hair left at all after some of the things that have been going on. There are reports of over 800 former military bases across the United States. You know, Rumsfeld was very good about budget consciousness and closed down all sorts of military bases, including Fort Dix in New Jersey.
Those are really clandestine martial law takeover command centers. Stay there. Let's talk about that when we get back. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
The worldwide narcotics trade is controlled by Western governments, predominantly the United States and England. They will go in and put a government in charge to even up production. It is mainstream news that it is legal for international bodies and governments to invest heroin and cocaine money in the New York Stock Exchange. Money laundering, all of it is completely legal for the elites. But if they catch your teenage son with marijuana, they're going to prison. That's why they wage war. 87% of drug users, illegal drug users, only use marijuana. So they need to keep that phony war going as a pretext. You've only got about 13% of drug users that use the heroin and cocaine and other things. You know, one of the only scourges that isn't government-controlled is methamphetamine. And then because the government controls the ingredients to that, the makers of it have to mix scores of chemicals, and then that's what makes it so much more toxic and is killing so many people. So it'd be bad enough to have pure methamphetamine on the streets. But they, of course, the government makes that to where it's made with toxic waste, and so it kills people. I mean, just whatever they touch is pure death, and they know what they're doing. They're completely and totally ruthless. William F. Engdahl, they're taking over the food systems, the GMO, the stomach and intestine cancers are off the charts, everything by design, and they're only intensifying it. Where do you see this going? I mean, they've shown their hubris. There's no level they're going to stop at. They're funding the social services to grab over 1 million children a year. They're only building more prisons. They're converting much of the economy over into a militarized police state domestically. The defense contractor companies are running the face scanning and license plate running systems. The threat fusion centers on a county-by-county basis are being federalized. The left thinks that martial law is going to be declared this week by George Bush. Martial law, as you said, is already here economically. It's an incremental militarization with the brigades activating with the announcements of microwave guns to be used against the American people. Where do you see all this going?
Well, there are any number of scenarios, but as you point out, all the executive orders have already been signed and put in place to mobilize people into forced work camps like the Nazis did in Germany, to seize property, seize housings, relocate communities, and take federal control of all of the functions of the economy if the president signs an order declaring a national emergency. And that could be almost anything. One scenario I've heard, and I just throw this out that people keep this in mind, God forbid that it happens, but it has happened to other American presidents. Let's imagine a scenario if a certain Democratic candidate is elected and takes the oath of office next January. There was a whole series in the New York Times over the weekend about the fact that Sarah Palin, this fanatical member of Joel's army, this fanatical Christian sect that has nothing to do with the traditional Christianity, but is very powerful in certain military circles and certain intelligence circles in the U.S., that in her campaign rallies, she's fanning hate, where people shout and they get so whipped up with frenzy, they shout out, kill Obama, let's kill the bastard. And as the New York Times points out, that's a fairly unhealthy climate to create his background noise. But that could be a cover for another CIA assassination of something if the elites decided they wanted to take out the president and declare a state of emergency. Any number of things are possible. It's gone so far down the line. When the Congress buckled under with this fake protest organized by McCain, after this little antic, they buckled under and gave exactly what Paulson wanted in the first place. Paulson and his sidekick, as you point out, Cash Carey, the Patriot Act in the financial realm, that, you know, there is no institutional opposition that's visible on the horizon at this point. It's a slow motion coup d'etat or a police state takeover by these elites. They're desperate. I think, frankly, this is aspects, this is an empire in terminal decline, like the Roman Empire in the 4th century AD.
But it's such a vicious, wicked empire. Empires have always been based on slavery as one of the main pillars that support it. And so how do we have slavery today? Well, they introduce addictive compounds, drugs, into the society. They use that to corrupt the police and military and the constabulary. Then that increases crime because the drugs are very expensive, and so the drug addicts go out and rob and steal to get it. Then that's used as a pretext to expand the police force. Then the police force is moved into mainly policing and running intelligence operations and spying on the citizenry. I mean, that is so cold-blooded to ship the drugs in and then have cops being killed, citizens being killed, the drive-by shootings, everything that's associated with black market wars, and that's only one facet to what these people do. I mean, they are truly wicked. They are truly cold-blooded, and they want a global depression. They want a global collapse so that they can reorganize things and pose as the saviors throughout the process. The big question, as Ron Paul and others have said, can we expose that it's them orchestrating this and then use the calamities they've created as a pretext, you know, to wake the people up against them, or will they be able to use it as a pretext to sew up total control?
Yeah, I think it's a toss-up right now. I think if people, one thing that the American people have historically is an incredible capacity to get angry when they really finally get the picture. Now, you can look back historically, Alex, in the post-war period at the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, probably into the trillions of dollars spent by the elite to create an information cocoon around the reality that people live in the United States so that the average American has not a clue of what's really going on in the world. The GIs come back from Iraq, come into a bar and sit down and have a beer and say, why do Europeans hate Americans so much? We're trying to help them. We're trying to save them. We're trying to defeat terrorism in Iraq. And they don't have a clue how they're being used. So, although some of them do, there's through the internet and so forth, there's a huge...
Well, that's what's so sad, though. There are so many good people in government who don't even have part of the picture, much less the big picture, and they get shot, they get maimed, they get killed, they get their health care cut. I mean, police that are enforcing this corrupt system, their whole future is being destroyed. Their pension funds are being sucked up in the derivatives black hole. I mean, that is the big question is, will they wake up? And the people are waking up to some degree, but it takes a lot of courage to admit just how bad things are.
Yeah. And it does indeed. And a lot of people are scared for their pension. They're scared for the, we're all mortal. Everybody listening to your program is at one point or another in his life going to cash in. So, what are we going to do with that time? And there's a lot of examples of people in places like Germany in the 1930s who said, well, if I'm just brave and keep my head low, it'll blow over and maybe I'll survive. And that was a pretty bad experience for a lot of people.
That's right. In fact, every avenue I look now and historically and integrating my own analysis with all the other great experts like yourself we have on, the most dangerous course is going along with this and submitting to them, because they see that as a green light to just run wild in their hyper-dominance and control and corruption. And the safest course is aggressively standing up, speaking out, saying no to them. And just as 9/11 was an inside job and we had to start a movement to expose false flag terror that's been very successful in neutralizing the enemies, the social engineers' use of that, we have to start a movement now to expose that this financial implosion is a controlled, military-executed operation, and that if they are successful, we will go into the new 21st century dehumanization control grid.
Yeah. And I think it's, as I say again, I think it's up for grabs right now. They're in a high-stakes gamble, the highest stakes imaginable, the future of their power. And
Let's talk about that. What'll happen if they don't win? Because you were talking about this confluence, you know, that some of the elements aren't going along with this, but they may be whipped into going along. I mean, what do you see happening, or on the good side and the bad side, where do you see this going?
I see what's emerging is from China. I see various Asian countries lining up distinctly outside the dollar domination that they've had for the last 30, 40 years, and beginning to look to regional solutions. I see Russia and China moving closer together. Now, that may sound heretical inside the United States, but keep in mind that the U.S. through NATO has rammed American and NATO missiles right up the nose of Moscow in the last 16 to 18 years, at a time when the Soviet Union dissolved and they abandoned the Warsaw Pact and started taking down their military. And then all of a sudden they look around and what's Washington doing? Pop, 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 pop. All these countries are being recruited into NATO. And that's a life and death threat to Russian security. So that's in effect pushing the Russians and the Chinese closer together. The Chinese are being hit by U.S. destabilizations in Tibet, U.S. destabilizations run by the State Department in Burma, Myanmar, which is a strategic neighbor of China, both for energy and for naval docking rights to protect their oil lanes from the Persian Gulf. And so what's happening is these countries say, look, this new world order of the Bush clan spells disaster for us. We better figure out a new combination. And that's exactly what the U.S. elites, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Barack Obama's foreign policy advisor, warned against. He said American primacy, supremacy as the sole superpower depends on our preventing the nations of Eurasia from coming together, because they have everything they need to be independent of us.
But necessity is the mother of invention, so they're being forced into the coalition.
Exactly. A coalition of the unwilling. And, reality can change a lot of things. So I think it's one of the most extraordinary periods, because you have...
Hold on, William F. Engdahl, final segment. I'm going to hear from you how you think this is going to play out and unfold. Maybe twist his arm for 10 more minutes to 40 after, so you can talk some about the eugenics agenda. Got a special guest announcement coming up in the next segment, so stay with us for that. Okay, William F. Engdahl, we're going to be back on in a few weeks to get into the larger eugenics operation, which is stated. I mean, it's hard to believe this stuff, but it's on record. It's bad news. William, finishing up, what do you expect them to do in the short term economically, trying to set up this new international banking system that's really already there, but that is making it go public, versus what you think they'll actually get?
What I think is emerging is going to be a foul compromise from the original agenda that Paulson, Bernanke, and Greenspan and company in the New York J.P. Morgan Chase Citigroup wanted. Their plan was mooted last week by France and by Italy, two governments very close to the Bush administration in Europe, and it was shot down very, very strongly by the Germans and several other countries. So I think what's going to emerge in the next months is going to be a very, very difficult period from the standpoint of Paulson's agenda, the New World Order agenda. And it's this battle between a national solution, which the Germans are opting for, and this global solution, which is kind of this global control the money, you control the world scheme that Paulson and friends have created, this securitization to try to bring a giant step further. And it's going to be up for grabs. It's going to be extremely dangerous. How it's going to unravel into the new year. The other thing is that makes this thing so so hairy for Paulson and Co. is this fact that the resets on not the subprime, the resets on the subprime have peaked and are starting to ebb. But now we have a whole new wave of resets that kick in this month, October 2008, and peak in October 2009 for so-called Alt-A, the next tranche of mortgages of toxic waste.
And then not just mortgages, credit cards, home improvement loans, car loans. It is all coming due as the real economy implodes, overlaying that with at least 20% inflation, already 15%, but 20% compounded by next year. This is going to be hellish.
Yeah, and these resets, I mean, this pre-programs is like the tsunami, just wave after wave after wave. It's going to be a devastating thing, and that's why Paulson wanted to militarize the financial system under his command, or under the command of Cash and Carry, I guess we can call him, but directly in the hands of the elite. And if that doesn't become an election issue in this campaign and get taken on directly, then there's something seriously wrong with
the
American body.
For those that don't know what a derivatives reset is, and these credit default swaps and all these securitized debt, explain what them coming due means.
Well, this isn't a derivative reset. It's a home mortgage reset on the interest rate. These were...
No, I know, but those have then been sold in as securities, so
okay.
that causes that blow up.
Yeah, they were bundled into giant securities of $1 billion worth or $500 million worth and sold to pension funds because Moody's and company gave them a AAA rating, got a little bit of insurance on the edge, and packaged them as good as gold, good as U.S. Treasury bonds, AAA, and paying a much higher yield. Well, the underlines are these mortgages, and the mortgages for the least creditworthy segment of the population, or a whole chunk of it, 40, maybe the 40% on the bottom in terms of income, those go into reset. So the defaults, the walking away from homes, and a lot of them were speculative. You know, people buying a home as a spec home and flipping them in 3 to 5 or 6 months or 3 years before the reset takes place. They're just going to walk away from those homes, and the banking system is going to be choking in empty homes. Ghetto gangs are already moving into neighborhoods in Ohio, California, and elsewhere.
Are you kidding? They got mountain lions moving in California into major neighborhoods and bobcats. I'm sure. Well, William
really?
F. Engdahl, it's been an amazing interview. And bottom line, the establishment is massing all the money and power into themselves at the expense of the dollar down the road. What are they going to do in the last minute we've got when everybody finds out the dollar's been turned into toilet paper?
Well, the dollar has been strong primarily because the hedge funds and others have to come up with dollar assets to shore up their position, so they're getting out of Japanese yen, euro positions, and so forth. That's going to play out fairly soon, I think, within in the next weeks. And once that's over, the reality of the disaster that is U.S. economy going into an economic depression like in the 30s, that's going to hit, and there's going to be very little inclination by the part of foreign
Are you
investors.
Saying guaranteed depression?
I don't see anything that gives an indication it's not going to be a Great Depression, probably worse than the 1930s. But the elites in the 30s had no problem with putting the population through a depression.
William F. Engdahl, when do you see the depression happening?
It's on.
So it's just expanding out from now. Thank you.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
CNBC today with a big market analyst talking about how everything's been going liquid the last 2 weeks as people try to secure their position as they dump in different securities, different commodities, different things they own. to try to make up losses they've had in the market, people who'd been shorting things, or there's many different economic devices that they've been having to liquefy their assets for. But there's just finally mainstream experts everywhere talking about the fact that the demand for gold is so high that mints all over the world, from Germany to the United States, have run out of gold and can't say when they're going to have coins. The South African big government mint that puts out Krugerrands is out. They can't sell anymore. Everything they're mining is just going to previous orders. I wanted to play a little bit of this, then get into martial law. Here we go.
So how does your portfolio look then? I mean, just taking into consideration what Steve says at the moment, where we're trading right now, how should one's portfolio look heading into this week, coming off the back of last week, where so much was lost? Do you put more into gold? One viewer is asking about your outlook for gold over the next 6 to 12 months. Are you shoring more towards some of the currency trades instead of equities?
Well, I think coming into this weekend, there's no question one's portfolio should have been flat. But coming out of it, I think you've got to start picking out where exactly the consequences are going to fall. For example, take gold. I remain very bullish of gold over the medium term. However, in the very near term, I think that there's a risk for further liquidation to occur. There's further deflationary forces occurring, not least of which is because, as we pointed out, there's going to be a significant pull on resource from government issuance. So gold could easily play into this 650 to 850 place over the course of the next 3 to 6 months. Buying zone. Gold will be through 2000 sometime in the next 18 months. We are going to have the most almighty inflationary ramifications for what's going on, because I'll bet you that the central banks don't pull back this liquidity in anything like the amount of time that they should.
So why haven't we seen more buying in gold over the past 2 weeks alone?
I think that's a question some people have asked. I think Friday was very indicative, Louisa. Everything got sold. Gold sold off about $70 from its highs. Everything that anyone could sell to raise cash, to pay off whatever they needed to pay off, and gold was one of the things that got hit. All has been hit in the same light as well. Both, of course, are reflecting, additionally, the lack of speculative element. Both are reflecting economic conditions going forward and the deflationary forces around us. That will change, but that moment isn't upon us.
Let me jump in and ask a similar question.
So what's happening is, and I agree with that, I don't think gold's going to go below 750. In fact, it may not even do that. Probably won't. But the point is, that's because you have massive depression in the real world economy, not just in the United States or Europe. Massive contraction. That's why oil is plunging. There's no money to go in and speculate it up. And it doesn't matter if the dollar's devalued, because as we go into the winter season, when there's a lot less driving, it's always the summer season when we see oil spike, you are seeing the fact that millions and millions of barrels a day less are being used in the U.S., millions a day less in England, millions a day less in Europe. And so because there has been such a massive drop in the amount of people using it, because the economy is contracting and less things are being delivered to stores and less 18-wheelers are driving down the highways, you're going to probably continue to see oil drop down to maybe even $60 a barrel. But then as the inflation sets in, the hyperinflation, it won't matter if the economy has been depressed, because you're going to see oil race back up to highs, perhaps even by next summer, of above what we saw last summer. Okay, so right now everything's being cashed in. The economy is grinding to a halt. It is stopping for all intents and purposes. The factory lines are shutting down. All of this is going on. By the way, Ford and General Motors knew this. That's why they're moving to China, moving to Mexico, moving out of the United States, shutting down entire core areas of manufacturing. They're leaving, and they're preparing to have a scaled-down, smaller market in the future. That's why there's major talk of Chrysler and General Motors merging, because there just isn't room for that many major automakers at the scale we've been seeing with the fact that the economy is going into freefall. Now, all of this is being engineered. The global crime cartel, the global banking system, has to bring in world depression in the real economy so they're able to consolidate wealth. And then all the liquidity, the only real liquidity, is being guaranteed by the central banks of the United States and Europe to be paid directly into select inside crews, a select good old boys network, where they will be the only ones that have any real currency or liquidity to do things like takeovers, leveraged buyouts, you're going to see an expanded, let's slow down lightly, an expanded second wave as the prices of companies plummet, as the prices of stocks plummet. You're going to see a massive consolidation by this inner group of financial robber barons. And I would say that the next year and a half, you will see that really intensify. So right now, as bad as things are, this is only the edge, the leading edge of the black hole. As we get closer to the center of the black hole, to the vortex, the economic forces are going to be conservatively hundreds of times compounded what we're currently seeing. You integrate that in with massive increase in crime, even people that have not been criminal in the past start stealing to make ends meet. Not saying it's good, but that historically happens. It's just a fact. People who did have a criminal lifestyle decades ago but had, quote, been reformed by getting better jobs, they are going to revert back into crime. Drug addicts are still going to want their drugs, and so you're going to see a massive increase as inflation goes up in the amount of stereos and computers and jewelry and cars that have to be stolen. There's going to be a lowering in the market, even though there's inflation, in what people will pay for stolen goods, because there'll be a glut of items being sold in the open market. I already see RVs being sold all over the place in Austin, SUVs being sold all over the place just on the streets and people's yards. You're going to see a glut of items poured out as we go into depression in the real economy, and there will be a giant glut or an oversupply of goods and services. With a real contracting money supply physically on top of a physically depressed economy with an overlay of hyperinflation, but only liquidity being given to the elite banks. You understand? That means imploding the real economy, massively increasing crime, massively increasing unemployment, putting huge burdens on top of the government funds to pay out the unemployment and welfare, which will then accelerate the printing of dollars even more. When you couple a real economy depression with hyperinflation, you have hyperstagflation. God help us. Never before seen, not even in the Weimar Republic. This is going to be unprecedented. Now, the Corbett Report, not the Corbett Report, the Corbett Report is a great YouTube channel, like Enough Respect or some of the other great ones that are out there. The Gatekeeper Invasion. Gatekeeper, I wish you wouldn't have left YouTube even though they suspended your account. We need you there. That's a bigger viral port for you to fight the info war. But there are so many great YouTube channels that then virally go into all the other major video channels, reaching millions every week. He has really been doing a great job putting some material together. And I think in, how long is this clip, John? In this 10-minute clip, I think he boils it down nicely. Then I'll come back and break down the latest developments out of the Boston Globe headline, postponing the election, is it a joke or is it? And it tongue-in-cheek, but seriously looks at it. But it's more of a liberal panic that George Bush will declare martial law. That was certainly always a threat, but we're under physical martial law now. The type of hot martial law you're talking about isn't needed. Okay, that may come in the future with riots and the pretext they need to sell it to the public, but this will happen in slow motion. And so the media is going to come out and say, see, the election happened, no problem. John McCain or Barack Obama, there wasn't any martial law. You guys are discredited. Meanwhile, as troops start fanning out on the streets of America, driving by, helping the police for fires, roadside accidents, they're announcing in the Army Times, oh, they're going to have the jaws of life and help get people out of their cars. It'll all be PR. Why is the Army here? Oh, they're helping. So you have to have that PR phase first, then the hot martial law comes later. Let's go ahead and start the report.
During debates on the banker bailout bill on the floor of Congress last week, Congressman Brad Sherman made a startling revelation.
Many of us were told in private conversations that if we voted against this bill on Monday, that the sky would fall, the market would drop 2,000 or 3,000 points the first day, another couple thousand the second day, and a few members were even told that there would be martial law in America if we voted no.
Martial law is defined as the rule by military authorities imposed on a civilian population. According to an article in the Army Times last month, the administration's threats of implementing martial law is not idle talk. In this shocking article, the U.S. Army admits they're bringing a combat team back from Iraq to continue their mission in America, and that this combat team will be assigned to NORTHCOM to assist in the event of civil unrest in crowd control through non-lethal weaponry. This deployment is, of course, in direct violation of long-standing laws known as Posse Comitatus and the Insurrection Act, which strictly prohibit the U.S. Army from policing American citizens on American soil. While such extraordinary steps toward the open implementation of martial law on the streets of America might seem like the Bush administration's last-ditch effort to keep the public in check while they rob the Treasury of hundreds of billions for their banker friends, it is crucial to understand that this is only the final stage in a careful plan that has been unfolding for decades through both Republican and Democrat administrations. Government plans to suspend the Constitution and effect martial law have been taking place behind the scenes under continuity of government contingencies, first exposed in the mid-1980s and raised by Congressman Jack Brooks during the Iran-Contra hearings.
Colonel North, in your work at the NSC, were you not assigned at one time to work on plans for the continuity of government in the event of a major disaster?
Mr. Chairman,
I believe that question touches upon a highly sensitive and classified area, so may I request that you not touch upon that, sir?
I was particularly concerned, Mr. Chairman, because I read in Miami papers and several others that there had been a plan developed by that same agency, a contingency plan in the event of emergency that would suspend the American Constitution. And I was deeply concerned about it and wondered if that was the area in which he had worked.
I most respectfully request that that matter not be touched upon at this stage. If we wish to get into this, I'm certain arrangements can be made for an executive session.
Urban warfare drills took place throughout the 90s, with American troops training with foreign soldiers to arrest and detain U.S. citizens.
What you're seeing is real. April 10th through April 20th in Swansboro, North Carolina. This has been repeated across the country in the last 2 years. So-called urban warfare training in America. Of course, in the case of Swansboro, they actually pulled people over and searched their vehicles with the local police department. A local listener sent me this video of the Swansboro incident. You see, they take out groups of young officers from across the country in the Marine Corps and teach them that it's okay to go into American towns and cities and take over the city halls and search vehicles. In this training exercise, it became real. They become so arrogant, they just follow their orders and began to search people's vehicles. And as you're about to find out, it's not just the Marines, it's the Army too, in Central Texas.
These drills quickly became reality, as in 2005, the National Guard was deployed in the wake of Hurricane Katrina to seize legally held guns from law-abiding citizens against their will and at gunpoint.
No one will be able to be armed. We will take all weapons.
Police Department! Police Department!
All of a sudden, they were banging on the front door, the side door, and the back door, and they said, let us in. I said, it's not even loaded, and I dropped it on the floor.
You got a gun.
Well, they punched me in the face. Look at my black and blue marks. Look at what they did to me.
In 2006, a secret government program came to light, which is recruiting clergy members to preach obedience to government in the event that martial law is declared. In 2007, the program was confirmed on CBS News.
If martial law were enacted here at home, like depicted in the movie The Siege, easing public fears and quelling dissent would be critical. And that's exactly what the clergy response team, as it's called, helped accomplish in New Orleans.
Jeff, the primary thing that we say to anybody is let's cooperate and get this thing over with, and then we'll settle the differences once the crisis is over.
Such clergy response teams would walk a tightrope between the needs of the government versus the wishes of the public.
In a lot of cases, these clergy would already be known in the neighborhoods in which they're helping to defuse that situation.
For the clergy, one of the biggest tools that they will have in helping calm the public down or obey the law is the Bible itself, specifically Romans, Romans 13.
Because the government is established by the Lord, you know, and that's what we believe in the Christian faith. That's what's stated in the Scripture.
And on May 9th, 2007, President Bush signed off on National Security Presidential Directive 51. This top-secret continuity of government plan effectively makes the president a dictator, allowing him to declare a national emergency for any reason whatsoever and implement martial law without the approval of Congress. The plan itself is so secret that not even members of the Homeland Security Committee in Congress are allowed to see its contents.
But now they've denied the entire Homeland Security Committee of the United States House of Representatives access to their so-called detailed plan to provide for continuity of government. They say, trust us. Trust us, the people who brought us Katrina, to be competent in face of a disaster. Trust us, the people who brought us warrantless wiretapping and other excesses eroding our civil liberties. Trust us.
These are just a few of the dozens of preparations that have already been completed to phase martial law in incrementally, bringing it about in stages, so an official declaration of military rule need not even be made. But if martial law is already a reality, what excuse will be used to turn the military against the American public?
Have you heard about this new thing going on in Great Britain that Al-Qaeda written up all these Britons, essentially, 1,400 strong, apparently, in a new, what's being called a new white Al-Qaeda?
Okay, folks, we are back live. I'm going to go back into the orbit report.
Call my name,
last 3 or 4 minutes of it.
When I'm leaving,
and then
I won't even turn my
I will continue
head.
To break down what we're going to see unfold.
Don't send your kin.
Stay with us.
Give me no talking.
Have you heard about this new thing going on in Great Britain that Al-Qaeda written up all these Britons, essentially, 1,400 strong, apparently, in a new, what's being called a new white Al-Qaeda army? Tougher to detect, potentially.
Yeah, because so they're not Muslims. They look just
exactly
like
right.
regular British people.
They're converts.
In 2001, Section 802 of the Patriot Act made any criminal offense, even misdemeanors, classifiable as terrorist activity. In 2006, the Military Commissions Act gave the executive branch the authority to declare U.S. citizens and residents unlawful enemy combatants and detain them in undisclosed locations indefinitely. And now, H.R. 1955, known as the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act, currently awaiting passage by the Senate, will effectively outlaw dissent of the government, even on the internet. It seems the table has been set for those citizens who resist any government decree to be dealt with as terrorists by the U.S. military. And now that the banker bailout bill has been passed despite fierce public outcry, dissent has never been more rife amongst the general population.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
Yeah, John. What's up, man? Oh, okay. Fantastic. Thought that clip was a little bit longer than I had thought. Well, it breaks down the basic facts that we were discussing earlier. And when we get back after this break, I am going to go through this story postponing the election. It's a joke, or is it? But for right now, I'm just going to leave you with whatever John wants to play.
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. We'll find out why in a moment.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in association with the Fund for the Republic, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels and social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. And Mr. Huxley, right off the bat, let me ask you this. As you see it, who and what are the enemies of freedom here in the United States?
Well, I don't think you can say who in the United States. I don't think there are any sinister persons deliberately trying to rob people of their freedom. But I do think, first of all, that there are a number of impersonal forces which are pushing in the direction of less and less freedom. And I also think that there are a number of technological devices.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are back live already into the third hour of this worldwide broadcast. Coming up in 30 minutes, Bob Dace is going to be in studio with us again for the balance of the show. And we're going to have open phones talking about a host of issues. I want to hear from the listeners about what you think the depression, which is a foregone conclusion, it's guaranteed with hyperinflation now, what that's going to be like. Having a massively contracting real economy while the currency is worth less and less and less. What do you think that is going to be like? How are you going to respond to that? How are you going to respond if, let's say, you owe $100,000 on your farm, you've already paid over $1 million over 20 years on it, and they come to you and say, you got to pay the whole note right now or we're taking it. And you say, but I've got 2 years to pay it off. And they say, no, the whole note is demanded now. Or the economy gets so bad that you don't even have the money for the payments, just on a regular payment schedule. I mean, I have read up quite a bit on the Great Depression. I've talked to a lot of old folks that lived through it. I know it was tough for people in East Texas, where a lot of my family came from, where they owned their land for generations outright. At the end of the 10-year depression, there weren't really any white-tailed deer or possums or raccoons left. People make fun of people in the country eating possums. It's better than the 7 million people, according to university studies, that starved to death over those 10 years. And I know I talk about this a lot, 90% of the public was supposedly self-sufficient during the Great Depression. Now, 90-plus percent are not. And so we can talk all day about the New World Order and how they're engineering this and how they're carrying it out and how they're setting up a world banking system or giving that world banking system governmental power. But what preparations have you made and what do you see happening in the future? You know, I see stories out of the Boston Globe like this one, and let me just read it and then comment on it. Postponing the election, it's a joke or is it? By Alex Beam. Thank heavens for the internet. It's put the surprise back in October surprise. Here's how the latest big picture conspiracy theory, which has been gathering strength in the blogosphere, the way a hurricane feeds on Caribbean waters. So the implication there is a conspiracy theory and that it's something bad like a hurricane and it feeds on itself. I thought the president openly talking about martial law or Congress being threatened with martial law, they didn't pass something by the executive, which is criminal. I thought that gave it steam. I thought the Army announcing they were going to have brigades here, not just one, but a whole bunch of different brigades, and they list a bunch already in action to, quote, suppress the American people for civil disturbance. I thought that gave it steam. I thought talk of depression gave it steam. I thought the Houston Chronicle and other papers talking about FEMA camps built for the American people, I thought that gave it steam. Here is the latest big picture conspiracy theory, which has been gathering strength on the blogosphere, the way a hurricane feeds on Caribbean waters. It is widely believed, both online and increasingly offline, that the Bush administration intends to declare martial law and postpone next month's elections to prevent Barack Obama's inevitable ascension into the Oval Office, obviously. So this also sells the false idea that the majority of people talking about martial law think Barack Obama's a good guy and that the police state doesn't want him, when he is the person who's gotten three times the political contributions from Wall Street that John McCain has. I'm just stating a fact. I mean, he's the consummate insider. He's got Joe Biden in there with him, the super insider. I'm gonna break this whole thing down and then go over real police state developments that we're facing when we get back from this quick break. And wide open phones for the next 2 hours at 1-800-259-9231. I'm Alex Jones. This is the GCN Radio Network. Again, the website's rjonesreport.com, infowars.net, truthnews.us. We'll be right back. This is Key Information. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
For use against the American people that are illegal to be used in war against enemies. We have the head of the Air Force saying last year in the Associated Press, that's okay. If we use them on the American people, then that will legitimize them as a non-lethal weapon. Then they come out last week and say, you know what, these actually kill people. We're going to go ahead and use it. See, kind of like the taser. 50,000 volts have killed more than 400 people documented in the U.S. in the last 3 years. And they say, you know what, we're going up to 75,000 volts. So you have an even better chance of dying. And then when it kills a bunch of people, they come out, the federal government comes out and says, oh, it's a new syndrome that people in police custody die. The tasers have nothing to do with it. They just get so scared, 25-year-old men and women have heart attacks and die. It's the system laughing at everybody, getting the public ready for the military to be on the streets. But none of that has anything to do with the police state. We're just delusional, and we think martial law is going to start in the next 3 weeks. No. We have said for more than a decade that the military has been quietly gearing up for it, and that they have been quietly, you know, getting involved in law enforcement and now openly running urban warfare drills to acclimate the public. And then, as we told you, they announced, okay, there'll be Army brigades under NORTHCOM working with all these other agencies and other military arms. At the bottom of that Army Times article, it listed right there all the other brigades and National Guard groups and others working with the regular Army. And it's the very same groups we listed in Police State 2, the takeover, that I made in 2000, with the documents, with the video of them. So it's geared up all around you as they prepare the local police and local mayors and others to accept it. And if they don't like it, well, they'll just implement PDD 51, which is the governors and local police and local sheriffs have no authority. And the Congress has no authority. Totally lawless, high treason, absolutely criminal on its face. They haven't entirely repeal Posse Comitatus. It's also illegal under federal law. They don't care. It's also illegal for C-130s to fly in heroin and cocaine to the U.S. every day. But that doesn't stop the people that run this country. Postponing the election. It's a joke, or is it, Boston? Thank heavens for the internet. It's put the surprise back in October surprise. This theory, rumor, delusion, dates back, that's his quote, almost a year and a half with the appearance of the White House website of National Security Presidential Directive 5-1, which outlined a policy for continuity of government in the event of a national emergency. Such emergency is defined as any incident that results in extraordinary levels of mass casualties, damage, or disruption severely affecting the U.S. population, infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions. Economy or government functions, it goes on to say, or any other emergency is defined by the president. And it goes on to say the Congress isn't involved, but they don't mention that here. White House spokesman Scott Stanzel says the new directive supplants a Cold War emergency memorandum that is no longer valid in the post-9/11 world, with the country at risk of a no-notice terror attack. But on websites with names such as justanothercoverup.com and abovetopsecret.com, the public document, often described as secret, was read quite differently. FEMA official states Bush is planning to implement martial law. In a headline from Just Another Cover-Up, Pelosi declared martial law last night with a September headline from Above Top Secret. Well, they did under House rules, and that was actually in the mainstream news. But see, they don't link to mainstream news saying this. They link to alternative media to act like we're making it up. Like a much-awaited messiah, I am channeling the famous sociological text, "When Prophecy Fails, the date of the martial law takeover keeps moving forward." See, that's their way of discrediting it. No, the martial law is here. Members of Congress on the floor saying they were threatened with physical martial law if they didn't pass it. What is that? This spring, it was to coincide with the bombing of Iran. No, it was said that martial law could come in if that happened. This summer, when the devastation wrought by Hurricane Ike, in the minds of conspiracy theorists, the current economic crisis seems like a good moment for the suspension of the November election. Well, there have been all these mainstream headlines about could it be suspended. McCain said he was suspending his campaign. The martial law paranoia has an engaging adjunct, the FEMA coffin story. If you Google those words, you will find pictures, videos, and reams of text explaining that the Federal Emergency Management Agency has stockpiled 50,000 coffins. Or are they coffin liners or boxes? Well, no, we have the name of the company. You can link over to it, and it's plastic coffins, but they just make a joke out of it. In anticipation of a vast civil disturbance, presumably triggered by the imposition of martial law, we do not have FEMA coffins, said spokesman Debbie. And then the printer cut it off here. It goes on. On the one hand, you say, okay, this is internet madness. On the other hand, you note that Ireland's largest bookmaker, Paddy Power, is laying 20-1 odds that American election will be postponed. When I first checked the site on Tuesday, the odds were 40-1. We've seen this movie before, right? Writer Ron Rosenbaum remembers the 1972 story averring that Richard Nixon asked the RAND Corporation to study whether he could postpone that election, which he won handily. University of California historian Catherine Olmsted, author of the forthcoming Real Enemies, Conspiracy Theories, and American Democracy, World War I and 9/11, notes that Franklin Roosevelt's many enemies were convinced that he would assume dictatorial powers and cancel the election of 1944, which he won handily. There are all kinds of trends coming together now to feed the paranoia, Olmsted says. The financial meltdown evokes Americans' longtime fear and hatred of bankers, because our forefathers knew what was going on with the bankers. But see, the dumb Americans' hatred of them, like an ancestral memory. And people on the right think Obama's candidacy might mean the end of civilization. What's scary to the left right now is Obama has a real chance of winning, and there's a segment of the far left that thinks they will never let this happen. And of course, there is the inconvenient, animating truth. Sometimes the government does engage in real conspiracies like Watergate, Iran-Contra, and the assassination plot against Castro, Olmsted explains. I am sure you remember William S. Burroughs' famous observation, a paranoid man is a man with all the facts at his disposal. And it goes on to end with, say goodbye, goodnight, Sarah. The Sarah palindrome contest is officially over. A palindrome is a word for a phrase like madam, I'm Adam, that's spelled the same way backwards and forwards. This is the last official entry from Little Brown, copy editor Ben Allen. Harasser of taxes, a Mav, a Ma, sex at four Sarah. Really strange article. The judges will announce their decisions. That's just some blurb at the end of it. Okay. As I keep telling everybody, year after year, month after month, week after week, they are in a slow-motion martial law, militarizing the police, building FEMA camps, building emergency relocation centers, training the police for riot patrol, training your children how to tattle on you in the public schools, tracking all of your license plates in real time with months and months and months of data of where you've gone, where you've been, where you're going. I've been telling you about that for a decade. And finally, it is in the Portland Tribune and other papers this week. We could all be tracked. Cops test license plate cameras that store trace data. Portland police are testing a high-tech camera system that rivals anything in a science fiction movie. It can reach back in time and track your movements across the city and even produce photos of your previous locations. And it goes on. Well, the feds put that in a decade ago. Started putting it in, and it was complete about a year ago, as far as we can tell. That's why they got cameras at four-way stops in the middle of Montana or South Dakota. I mean, it's everywhere. It tracks you everywhere you go in real time, and it's all been admitted in government documents. I mean, is that not a total tyranny? Is that not total Big Brother? People say, well, what do I have to hide? It's the fact that governments can abuse good people and good populations and use this for oppression. It's that historically, governments can't be trusted with this type of power or anything approaching it. This is many times worse than anything governments have ever had before. And so while we live in martial law, with police asking us what we're doing, walking down the street, or telling us we can't protest or we'll be arrested without a permit they won't issue, or all these gun control laws, and neighborhood watch being turned into Homeland Security watch, and the government hiring felons and illegal aliens, you know, into the military and police. I mean, all of that, that is martial law. Congress being threatened with being removed or being ignored if they didn't pass legislation. That happened. And it's bigger than George Bush or Barack Obama or John McCain. People love to put dates on something for it to magically come, as if they have the police or the military to go round up the tens of millions of patriots in a week or a month or a year. It doesn't work that way. It's going to be a clampdown on counties and cities and mainstream media and the Congress. If Congress doesn't pass a bill, they get sent anthrax letters. The feds already use a backfire in the parking lot as a way to put guns to congressmen's heads and threaten to taser them if they don't leave the Capitol. That's the federal protective force doing that. The executive going in with its goons and telling the congressmen that they're nothing. It's already gone on. It's already here. Barack Obama says he wants a 1 million-man tattletale force and a 3 million-man environmental tattletale squad. In your home, with your kids telling you what you can and can't do, enforcing all these new environmental edicts. And now, Barack Obama came out and said that he is for women to be drafted as well as men. That's in the mainstream news. And then if I say I'm against a draft, oh, now I'm against Barack Obama. No, he's a front man. He's not the McDonald's Corporation. He's the person at the drive-through window you talk to. The point is, the establishment doesn't just want to draft men. They want to draft women, and they reactivated the draft boards. But see, now, if you're against the draft, you're against black people. See, it has nothing to do with that. These are the mindless games they play.
Your palace was soon.
States is going to be with us in the next segment. We're taking your calls for the next hour and a half with him as well, talking about the North American Union. They're taking over the infrastructure, the roads, the ports, handing it over. Some key fights happening here in Central Texas. Here is the article. It's out of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It's candidates differ on female draft, and it goes on from there. It goes on from there with, even as the U.S. confronts two long wars, neither Senator John McCain or Senator Barack Obama believes the country should take the politically perilous step of reviving the military draft. Oh, but then you look at all the draft boards being set back up. You see the draft board heads being said that on record that they've been told to get ready for a draft. You hear him saying that if we go into Iran, we'll need a draft. But the two presidential candidates disagree on the key foundation of any draft. But they just said they weren't for it. Mr. Obama supports a requirement for both men and women to register with the Selective Service, which is registering for the draft, while Mr. McCain doesn't think women should have to register. Also, Mr. Obama would consider officially opening combat positions to women. Mr. McCain will not. Women are already serving in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, and with the current policy, should be updated to reflect realities on the ground, said Wendy Morgie, Mr. Obama's national security spokeswoman. Barack Obama would consult with military commanders to review the constraints that remain. According to his campaign, Mr. McCain supports the current Defense Department restrictions on women in combat units, including armor, field artillery, and special forces. Okay, selective service, ladies and gentlemen, is for the draft. And that's one of the greatest forms of martial law, is conscription, to force people to come in and join the military, and when our military is bought and paid for by foreign interests, and go and serve in all these criminal wars. And they wanted to have a, quote, volunteer military, and now they're shifting it over to mainly contractors and drones, so it can be robotically controlled, and people at airfields can just load the drones with their bombs, with their Hellfire missiles. So we'll get Bob Dacey's take on the national draft and the economy as well coming up. But I want to get your take on the economy, the national draft, what's happening as well when we get back later in this hour. But let it be said here that we are already under martial law, but it's what degree? Say on a scale of 1 to 100, we're at about a 60 on the scale for martial law. A 90 to 100, you know, being troops rounding people up house to house. And I have no doubt that under a major depression, a deepening depression, years into a depression, if this continues, that things will be so bad and the media will be so controlled, you won't be hearing shows like this. They're talking about regulating and restricting and taxing and shutting down the web and certifying who can have websites and who can be on air and having a congressional body under the Domestic Terrorist Act they're trying to pass, the Homegrown Radicalization Act. I mean, all of this is happening. Congress is being told martial law will be declared. The police are being told this. It's in the news. 26,000 preachers have been hired secretly by FEMA. Now it's public. It's a big deal that we told you a year and a half beforehand to train their flocks, to hand in their guns, to not fight back, to go to FEMA camps. The media lies every year in the late summer and tells you it's the law. You've got to go take all these inoculations to go to school when there is no law that you've got to have the inoculations. When you have fraud by government and tyranny, and when the government doesn't carry out the will of the people or the Constitution, that is tyranny and martial law. When we know that all over the country there's electronic voting machines that have been caught in fraud, being remote controlled, stealing elections, and nothing's done about it, that is martial law. That is tyranny. And so we are in martial law, and we're going into deepening martial law, and as Ron Paul and many others have said, it is financial dictatorship and financial martial law that we see in the banker takeover bill. And now what are they announcing? A new world order banking system, and you'll buy your carbon credit global taxes from them, a tax based on human activity. You think the income tax is bad? This is far worse. So it's all coming up in the next segment with Bob Dacey, our guest in studio. Posts the Simple Truth here locally in Austin now for 9 years. Also writes for the New American Magazine nationally and internationally. Bob Dacey on the front line of fighting the North American Union and the NAFTA Superhighway. Stay with us.
This is the end. my only friend.
We'll be taking your calls coming up in the next segment for the Balance of the Radio Show with Bob Dacey with us in studio for the next hour and a half. We're live at PrisonPlanet.tv for the Balance of the Radio Show the next hour and 27 minutes. Again, we'll be talking about the economy, the banker takeover that's taking place, the immunity they're getting, the open discussions of martial law where the public sees the troops going on the streets of America, hears they're going to be used for riot control and crowd control. That is martial law. The Army's telling everybody that. They're saying we're working with the police. You know, the decades of having the police and military and urban warfare drills, and now the last 8 years of the military checking bags at high school, college, and NFL football games, and the Kentucky Derby, and any other high-profile event, getting you prepared. They're admitting it was preparing you. And Homeland Security had Ridge and now Chertoff saying they want to use the U.S. military against the American people. And the gun confiscation in New Orleans and surrounding areas, and now gun confiscation in Illinois, with the governor a month ago coming out and saying, yeah, we're going to use the Army to do door-to-door gun confiscation. The knock and talk, where the police come to your house and knock and say, do you have any guns? We want to inspect them. Or if it's an area where guns are illegal, do you have guns? We're going to come in and look, intimidating their way in. That is martial law. Congress being threatened, you better pass this banker takeover bill or we'll declare martial law. That's actually happening. And the mainstream media makes jokes and says, where are the troops? Where are the parachutes? Where are they taking over? Ignoring the fact that we told them this was all being set up, and now it's being phased in incrementally. I want to talk about that first, Bob, then we'll get into toll roads and everything else that's happening in the North American Union. We have a clip from Lou Dobbs, of all places, admitting they're still going ahead with the North American Union. That's coming up in a few minutes. But, Bob Dacey, your take on everything that's happening.
Well, Alex, it's kind of hard to keep up with it. I am amazed at your ability to just run these things off one after another after another after another. I can't keep up with it. Last 2 weeks ago, I was in the studio when the Congress grew some false cojones and voted down the bailout. And you were in a pretty good mood that day. I just hope you don't burn down your desk today like you almost did last time. I hope you're a little bit more serious today.
When I was burning
a dollar on air with a stack of papers underneath. Yeah, he's a brave guy, ladies and gentlemen. No, I just think that it's nuts, just insane, and that's all there is to it. And it's not by accident. You know, one of the things about this financial thing, you know, I was taught that these guys, you know, at Morgan Stanley and old Dean Witter and who was the old crotchety guy that said, we earn money the old-fashioned way, we earn it, you know, whichever one that was. You know, these guys are supposed to be pretty smart. And for all these financial firms
earn money the old-fashioned way. We steal it.
Yeah, well, you know, for all these guys that are supposed to be so smart, and the first thing they tell you as an investor is diversify. For all these guys,
long haul, long run.
Yeah, and for all these guys to screw up simultaneously and get involved in this derivative nonsense and these mortgages to the extent that it actually, if it goes south, takes down their whole company? I mean, you would have to believe that all these people are stupid in order to do that. You're supposed to take
risk. They have been openly moving the money into other accounts, into personal assets. Now they're just imploding the front company.
You know, what I'm saying is that you would have to be an idiot to take all your stuff and put it in one risky basket such that if it goes south, your entire operation goes down. Therefore, I would conclude that they did it on purpose.
Well, then we have all the documents where they did do it on purpose, and they didn't just, now they're admitting, we may use the Army if there's riots. We just so happen to have secretly trained them over 2 decades for this now and have all these secret relationships we've set up.
Well, you know, like I say, they're not dumb. And I am baffled. You know, the stock market's jumped up about 600 points today. I guess they're trying to get more idiots to think, oh, everything's fine now. Everything's fine now. They printed a bunch of money out of thin air, and they're going to bail out. They're going to bail out the bankers and everything. And we're going to do bait and switch on you, and everything is fine. Remember, Alex, 2 weeks ago, the big deal was Bernanke said that the idea was we get our $700 billion, and what we do is we buy the mortgages. And that's the cause of the problem. And we buy the mortgages at close to face value, and therefore everything will be great, right? And then all of a sudden they do the bait and switch.
We're going to buy principal in the company.
Wait, instead of they haven't bought any mortgage. Oh, wait, now that we got the money, and now that we got the the cojones-less Congress to do what we wanted them to do. Now, forget about the mortgages. Now we're gonna own the banks. Now we're gonna buy interest into the banks. It's bait and switch. In retail, you call that bait and switch, Alex. That's where they tell you one thing, you do it, and then they switch you to something else when you get there. You know, and they also told us, you know, if we don't do this bailout, we're all going to die. You know, the market's going to plunge. And so they did the bailout. The market plunged anyway. Of course it was going to plunge, you know. But now, today or yesterday, Mitsubishi loaned Morgan Stanley or bought into $9 billion. And now everything's just fine. Everything's just fine. Go home, relax, everybody. Don't worry about it.
And now they're saying they're going to buy into private companies, but the little central group of bankers, they're going to decide where government taxpayer is put, and then the owners of those companies, they get the benefits. We get devalued currency and have to pay it back in tax money.
Yeah, and they're getting this money from two places, right? They're getting this money, one, from us eventually through the taxation thing of inflation, where your money just keeps dissolving around you and you can't figure out why. And the other thing is they're just printing some of it out of thin air, which is inflation. I mean, and of course they're going to tax us some more to pay for all of our free stuff, which we're going to get when Obama takes over. You know, it's going to be great. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's insane. The insanity is institutionalized.
But you call it insane.
It's diabolically insane.
It's diabolical because for people that are on the outside who have a good worldview, want to help people, who want to live in a secure economy, a true free market, it looks insane. But to these robber barons, they need to destroy economies to be able to consolidate them.
Yeah. It's a controlled implosion. My analogy to this thing is, okay, our financial house is on fire, right? Okay, so what do? We call the fire department. Problem is, we don't know that the fire department employs arsonists. Okay, so now you get a bunch of arsonists dressed up like firemen. They get in their little suits and they get in their little fire truck and they drive to the fire to put out the fire. And so they hook up their hoses and we're saying, yay, they're going to save our financial house, which is on fire. And instead what they're doing is they're spraying it with gasoline. That's what's going on.
And then
on.
The fire spreads, and they say, we need more firemen.
Oh, more guys.
Give us more taxes because the fire is spreading. Meanwhile, it's only securing the central banks and ensuring it implodes the real economy. So coming out on the end of it, only the central banks are in a good position. They have all the liquidity. They've cut off the liquidity of the public, and they're able to come in and buy everything up. They're creating a depression in the real economy while giving unlimited liquidity in our name to themselves. Do you see what they're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, what other explanation is there for it? I mean, they are not trying to stop this. They are making it worse. Everywhere you look, we need another 150, Pelosi. We need another 100. Oh, we need another 150 billion, y'all. Okay, come on, let's go. Oh, and we're going to bail out these guys and those guys. And
Now they're saying they're going to bail out individual investors.
Well, yeah.
But only select ones.
Me too. You know, and then, of course, you know, the Democrats go, well, we need to bail out these idiots that borrowed all this money that they couldn't pay back, too. Okay, so we're going to bail out the guys that hold the mortgage, that own the properties that couldn't afford to buy them in the first place. And that'll make it okay. We just keep dumping money on top of everything.
And what that's going to do is fully devalue the currency faster.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's pick your poison. I mean, they are doing this on – they don't know what else to do. That's all
they
know.
And out of the crisis it creates, you're going to have more crime, a bigger police state, the riots will start, and the public will beg for physical hot martial law, not the incremental martial law.
I just want to know this warm, fuzzy thing of this military outfit that just came back from Iraq going to help. I mean, what have they been doing?
Well, if you read at the end of the Army Times, it lists a bunch of other brigades that are already active in the U.S.
So the question is, what are these guys
going to
do?
Well, they tell us they're going to do riot control for civil unrest and use microwave guns on us.
Well, why on earth would we have any of that?
But then Wired Magazine comes out and they announce, the Army admits that, guess what, the microwave gun is lethal, Bob.
You mean like the tasers are lethal? Yeah. Well, you know, you got to break a few eggs.
Well, it'll happen. It's just like with tasers when they kill you with them. They say, well, he didn't die from the 15 taser shocks we gave him. Well, when they microwave gun people and they die, they'll just say, well, we happen to be microwave gunning them, but they just fell over dead.
Well,
it's a new syndrome. Yeah, well, you heard that. All these young people dying in and around tasers, it's a syndrome, Bob.
He stayed out in the sun too long and got a tan. That's what it was. He was killed by over tanning. They're going to come up with something. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like they say, we're not for a national draft. We're for national compulsory service.
Yeah, that's what Mussolini and Hitler were all about, national service. You know, we serve the state rather than the state serves us, right?
Absolutely.
crazy.
Bob, what do you think about all the talk of martial law? I mean, people keep thinking it's going to come in one big spurt. It's already here.
Well, you know, it's incremental, and it's not like Red Dawn. You know, people think it's got to be Red Dawn. You got to have Cubans parachuting from out of the sky and blasting people at the neighborhood school, and little guys, teenagers running off in their pickup truck and going by the general store and grabbing guns and supplies and heading off for the hills. That's TV. That is just TV. You know,
that's Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
you know that Wolverine blue sports jacket he wears?
Yeah.
I got that.
Oh, you did? Oh, how about
that?
You
just gave it to me. Yeah.
God, I'm so jealous.
I think I'm going to bring that in and show it on TV because I was watching Red Dawn clips on YouTube last week, and I'm like, there's my jacket. There's my jacket. There's my jacket. When he's like up at the camp talking to his dad at the side of the camp.
Well, you know, martial law, you know.
Well, what is accurate in the movie is everybody's spying, and they're in the hardware store, and they're saying, shh, don't you know everybody's looking for you? But see, now it'd be a face scanning camera would pick you up right away.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, in a real world scenario, this is really minor, but in my business, you know, I have a local hardware store here in town. I'm the True Value guy in Austin, Texas, right? A few months ago, one of my customers that does apartment complex management sent a letter out to everybody, including us, and said, if you don't run your employees through the Department of Homeland Security, we can no longer do business with you guys because, you know, heaven forbid that one of our employees might intersect with one of your employees.
Well, that's
who
what
might
Ridge,
be a terrorist.
When they
you know?
Set it up, that's what Ridge said. You're going to have to be Homeland Security approved for any job.
It's ridiculous. I mean, can you imagine that?
But they do it through selective enforcement.
We can't go to the hardware store to pick up them toilet parts because their employees might be members of Al-Qaeda, and that'll endanger our people at the retirement
home.
See,
that's added bureaucracy to shut your company down.
It's a crock, is what it is.
So are you going to do it?
No, absolutely not. I looked at that and I said, well, that's just too bad. I'm not going to submit to that. You know, the ball cock is leaking over there at apartment 3C, and we got to go to Home Depot because their employees ran through Homeland Security, and they're not members of Al-Qaeda.
Meanwhile, I know the manager of the biggest apartment complex in Austin. She was told 4 years ago, over-enforce on citizens, but illegal aliens, let them break any rules, as many as they want in the apartments, because we've been given a secret federal grant, a tax break to do it. And then later, a year after, it came out in the paper that big insurance companies were giving breaks and the feds were giving tax breaks to companies and to different systems to, quote, help the illegal aliens. And the AP reported they were being given preferential treatment on home loans and car loans because the government wanted to help the illegal aliens.
Well, you know, Bush signed...
I mean, my point is it's not for our safety.
Well, you know, Bush signed a bill. I wish I remember where this clip was on the internet. But several years ago, Bush was signing a bill bragging about how they were going to encourage all these people to couldn't afford homes to get these 100% mortgages with these variable rates and how it was going to do good for them and encourage home ownership and cause
that was a big setup so they could pump up the derivatives.
Absolutely.
Because then they sell the bad loan.
Yeah, it's a crock. Where does that come from? The whole thing comes from these people.
Look, the government did this, and now they're going to take over. Look at this. Army orders pain ray trucks. New report shows potential for death. That's Wired Magazine. And when you read the article, it says, oh, yeah, it kills you. It's going to kill you. Just like, but they go on and say, but rubber bullets kill a good percentage of those, and so do tasers, so it's okay. We still call it non-lethal. But they're really called active denial systems. They're really called less lethal weapons. And they're going to deploy these to police departments. The Army's going to have them for use against the American people. How does that sound, Bob?
That sounds just wonderful. Absolutely, because, you know, it'll be good for us. It'll be good for us. And then our neighbors will be snitching on us the whole time. We'll have Gladys Kravitz going around peeking over her fence going, Abner, look, those people over there, I think I saw a gun in their living room. You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like I say, I cannot keep up with it. I don't see how you keep up with it. I really don't.
Well, they're training kids in the U.S. and England to be, quote, climate cops. It was in the New York Times saying it was good as the five-year-olds denounce their mommies and daddies, and the school has them write dossiers on them about their environmental crimes, and now they're already switching it over to drugs, guns, what's in the medicine cabinet. Austin schools, I have this on video, it's in Road to Tyranny, teach the kids to go and look in the medicine cabinet and write down what's in it when they're in the sixth grade. I mean, hey, land of the free, home of the brave, man.
Years ago.
Meanwhile, the government is pushing shipping the prescription drugs on the kids and shipping the narcotics in.
That's new freedom, though. That's okay. Years ago in Austin, there was an article in the Statesman where they were telling us, and they weren't joking, that if your kid goes over to the new kid's house and there's a rusty flintlock on the top of the fireplace, you need to maybe think about talking to that kid's parents because there's a gun in the house. I mean, they do this kind of
stuff.
Well,
there's all these women that make men they marry get their guns out of the house. Let me explain something. Number one, I wouldn't marry a woman like that who couldn't protect my children, who's been totally defanged. That's not feminism, having these knock-kneed, cowardly women that salivate when they see a black uniform and a ski mask, but hate it when they see a citizen owning a gun. I mean, it's amazing. But look right here. Oh, for your safety. Oh, it may cause death, no problem. We're going to kill you with the government. Look at this. New taser weapons produced for crowd control. Here's the new mass taser that Taser's putting out for police to just zap whole crowds of people. And it can kill you, but, you know, it's all right. They say that being shocked by it isn't the reason you die. It's just a new phenomenon. They're not sure that why when you're electrocuted you die. Bob?
Well, meanwhile, while they're doing this, they're continuing to build their NAFTA superhighway and try to toll everything.
We're going to cover that when we get back and take calls. But look at this. We could all be tracked. Cops test license plate cameras that store and trace data. I told people a decade ago about this, Bob, from the federal grants. Everywhere you go, even in the middle of the countryside, it's all recorded and it's all kept in a database, and your tax money pays for the giant hard drives to save it. Everyone's being tracked everywhere.
And you said that a million years ago, but the newspaper said it was just for traffic enforcement and things like that.
But now they're announcing, the feds with a grant. See, they build these emergency management centers, then every few months they go, here's a new upgrade. You can type in Alex Jones' Social Security number or driver's license, and it pops up where he's at. Even when my cell phone is off, it has GPS triangulation, real time. They know where I am. And it's the same thing with this, real time, all Pentagon design. It's all admitted. The Northcom says it is to control us, their enemy.
It's sad. Yeah, it really is. I just wish we could do what the hippies said back in the good old days, not participate.
But it's not just they track you with this. And it's not that I have anything to hide. They're a criminal government. They can't be trusted with this. They'll abuse it. It's that this also fries your brain. This also sends out microwaves. That's why I don't even usually carry my cell phone on me anymore. Happen to have it today. Notice I don't have the newest trendy. I have a 3-year-old cell phone. I'm not stylish. All right, Bob Dacey, stay there. We're going to come back. All right, Sean, Eddie, Jimmy, Matthew, David, and others, your calls are coming up. Bob, let's, one big part of this globalization is 83 major federal highways. They're going to make international zones. You'll pay international taxes that go into the SPP, Security Prosperity North American Integration Fund. And through that fund, they will then expand, taking over other roads and paying off local communities. Robert Pasture a few months ago said, the North American Union's dead. The people exposed it and didn't like it. But meanwhile, they are just rampaging forward with it. Bob Dacey.
Well, here's the deal, Alex. This financial catastrophe that we're going on under right now has caused some of these people in their financing schemes to do a little bit more, to kind of come out of the closet more with some of their chicanery. And we have a deal here in Austin that's basically, it's kind of like a pattern for the whole nation. The federal money to pay for highways has been drying up on purpose. They've been taking it away. They've been funding their north-south corridors for quite some time now. And so that forces the local people to try to scramble for more money to do the local projects. And of course, Austin, Texas is kind of like the pilot project for the whole thing. And so what you've got here is you've got all these toll roads, all this toll stuff going on, which is not technically the Trans-Texas Corridor or not technically the NAFTA Superhighway. So what they tell you, that you've got this local control now. You'll be able to control it with your local officials. Well, last year we had a big fight in Texas, and we kind of put a weak moratorium on the Trans-Texas Corridor. That was House Bill 792, I believe, Lois Kolkhorst was doing, and she's a good egg, by the way. But now we have a case in point here in Austin, which is nationally important. You've got the local board, which called the Campo Board, which is going to apparently, they had a vote last year to toll some roads around here, right? Okay, but we told them we didn't want to do it. Sarah Eckert, who was a county commissioner here in Austin, which replaced Karen Sunleitner, who we booted out because she was a toller, well, she kind of flip-flopped. She voted for the tolls, even though she said she wasn't a toller. You know, ask her, why'd you do that? And she said, well, because they blackmailed us. She said they promised us $900 million if we would toll the roads that we already paid for and, you know, improve.
And they've already lied previously and said they were never going to put tolls on them.
Yeah, and then they said they're going to give them $300 million if they voted not to toll. So it's a $600 million blackmail. And she wanted to be able to, she knew the thing was going to pass anyway, so she voted for it so she could maybe try to manipulate it a little. Well, she's kind of redeeming herself now, trying to, because there's a meeting tonight. This kind of got sprung on us. And I know you got an international audience.
This is just another co-op meeting. Go ahead and tell me about it. Being co-op.
You've got thousands of your listening right now that are in the Central Texas area. And there's a meeting tonight at the Joe C. Thompson Conference Center, University of Texas, at 6 o'clock down there at UT where they always have it, Dean Keaton and Red River
and
Street.
What is this meeting?
And this meeting is what they're doing. In the bill, 792, they said, listen, if you're going to build a toll road, we want local control and we want to do a study to make sure it's financially viable. Well, they did a study on tolling this road east of 290 East, and the study said it's not financially viable. It's in the red. It's not going to work. So now the Campo Board is meeting to try to say, well, we found a loophole where we can vote not to make it market viable, and we can use money from another toll road to pay for it. It's a big con job.
Yeah, Bob, I want to say something.
It's a con job.
I want to say something about the locals and everybody else, and they're all great people, stalwarts. But we have to go through this relearning process every time, and we never learn. Everything they say is lies. It's a criminal group taking over. They've said 10 times that they weren't going to put toll roads in as they passed right. The authority for it. And so then we always get caught in the minutiae of proving that they lied.
But you got to get down there and fight. You got to get down there and fight. And if people will show up
tonight.
No, I'm
not saying people shouldn't go. But
they got
to
go.
But go realizing, just to tell them, we know you're liars. We know you're taking over. We know this is all a scam.
Right.
I mean, what's the point?
And Eckert actually has admitted it. She says the commitment to local control is lip service.
Well, look, of course it is, though. I mean, it's all a political process to stall. We'll just keep going there in this segment. Bob, we can talk about this local stuff all day long, and we have fought them, we have politically exposed them, and people have done a great job, but you can have 1,400 people at a meeting stomping, shaking the building, and they still vote against you. They're still moving forward. The legislature can pass a law saying that Rick Perry can't toll existing roads, and he just overrides it criminally. He goes to Bilderberg Group to meet with indicted members of the Bilderberg Group that are involved grabbing TXU and grabbing roads and infrastructure and the power plants.
But if we can convince the Campo Board not to do this, break Texas law, basically find a loophole, that's a small victory. If we can't convince them to do it, it just exposes the criminality even more, and you got to fight.
Well, I would bring up all the old lies because we always focus on the new ones. Why not bring up the fact they swore none of these roads were going to be toll roads to begin with?
Well, yeah, they did that, and they also swore that they would never toll the interstates, and we blew the cover on that one last year. I was very proud of that. You know, they're a bunch of liars, and the more the people realize it, the more they wake up.
All right, we're going to come back to the full audience in about 10 seconds. And, plug when the meeting is again. I think people should go out to it. But just to believe nothing they say, because all they do is lie.
Yeah.
And here we go. Okay, we're looking at the local level of what's happening from Indiana to New Jersey. It's happening in Canada. It's happening in England, everywhere. They put transponders in your cars. They tax you upwards of $6, $7 a mile in some cases. They track everywhere you go with the transponders. The money goes to offshore corporations. These offshore corporations only loot. They only come in and get already built or already paid for roads, and then they just slap toll roads on it. Coming into Austin off of 183, back from Denver, I know that it says pay cash here, and then 100 yards later makes you get off and says only transponders allowed. So it's also another big scam and a joke there. They swore none of this was even happening. As the toll roads go in, they keep saying that those roads don't even exist. I mean, that's the level of lying for the sheeple out there. But where is it going? I know a little bit about this, but Bob, you're more up to date on it. We are having victories, though, thanks to people in Texas, with them claiming they weren't going to toll existing interstate highways and state roads. But now they had to admit they are planning that. Where is that going?
Well, Where that's going is I don't know. I mean, I heard that Senator Hutchison came out last year and said she was going to introduce a bill to stop the practice nationwide.
And then Bush signed an executive order saying federally we're going to hand the roads over.
You know, it's a big crook fest. You know, and you're right, Alex, you can't trust them as far as you can throw them. But anything we can do to throw stuff and tax.
What is she
nails,
doing at this co-op meeting?
How
are they trying to co-opt everybody?
What they're trying to do, without public hearing, they're trying to circumvent the legislative intent of the Texas legislature, which says that these toll roads have to be commercially viable and they have to pay for themselves, and any money that they make is supposed to stay right there on the toll road. What they're trying to do is say, well, no, we found out that this particular project is not commercially viable. Therefore, we don't care. We want to do a waiver so that the bankers will loan us the money. Because
I mean, by the way, while we're here talking about this, you're not just saying Austin's the battleground. They have said federally and internationally and at toll road conferences that Austin is the model, and they want to. They're learning. They're studying how to buy off politicians. They're studying how to lie. They're studying how to play all the games. So it is a key battleground.
And that's why any listeners that are in the Central Texas area need to be at this Joe C. Thompson Conference Center at 6 o'clock tonight on the UT campus. And go against this Campo board, item number 7, and tell them, no, don't vote for it. You're circumventing the legislative intent.
And this is the supposed locals that have authority.
Yeah, supposedly. And I've said forever that it's a sham.
Now, I know some of the board's new, but last time I checked, a bunch of them, wives and husbands, work for the toll company.
I don't know. I know that Kirk Watson is the one sitting on top of it, and he is the United Nations global whipping boy.
And he also owns a bank here in Texas, handing over.
Yeah, I understand that he is not going to be able to vote because he owns a bank that has something to do with it.
Yeah, with the real estate and the roads.
Yeah, well, you know, can you imagine that, a conflict of interest amongst these people?
It's like Goldman Sachs openly handing money to itself out of the bailout.
Can you believe that guy's name is Cash Carry? I mean, really, they take the cash from us and they carry it over to Goldman Sachs and they say, here, you figure out what to do with this money.
Oh, it's crazy.
But anyway, y'all got to be there if you're in Central Texas or I'm going to be ashamed of you.
You know what, Bob? Tonight. Just plug it over and over again. Just say it five more times.
All right, one or two more times. Campo board meeting tonight, October the 13th, 6 p.m., at the Joe C. Thompson Conference Center, University of Texas campus, Dean Keaton at Red River Street. Get over there because they sprung this on us and they're trying to do no public input.
Plug it again.
All right, one more time, just because repetition overcomes noise in the communications channel. I learned that. Tonight, 6 o'clock,
Joe C. Thompson. The propaganda.
That's right. Joe C. Thompson Conference Center, University of Texas campus, Dean Keaton at Red River. Any of you listening out there, you got to get over there by 6 o'clock and tell them no on item 7, where they're trying to circumvent the intent of the legislature.
It's just best to let them know you're fully aware of their operations.
And by the way, this is the same sort of financial nonsense which got us in trouble nationwide. All this ridiculous stuff. They say, well, the economics don't work. Well, let's just do it anyway.
Because the bankers paid us
We need the cheaper bonds from the New York bankers, so let's con everybody.
Yeah, that's what happens. They get the counties and cities pimped out like a heroin dealer does, an addict, totally strung out, and then they say, okay, just like what the IMF and World Bank does in third world countries. They say, you've got to do this 100-something things we say. Hand over your water. Hand over your roads. You got to privatize it. And the privatization just means handing it over. It doesn't mean they're even taking responsibility for it. Okay, I promise your phone calls on the economy and a lot more with Bob Dacey.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, Bob Dacey is in studio with us, going to your phone calls right now. Sean in Minnesota, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Alex, how are you doing today?
Good, sir.
I just wanted to call in. You asked about what we're doing with the current economy and stuff, and started raising some rabbits, and we're going to be raising some chickens, talking to people.
Do you have an animal premises ID and federal tax that isn't the law, but they threaten you as so they can shut down your small farmer ranch? Did you get a special permit from the government slave?
Yeah, you bet I did.
Good slave.
Yeah, we actually moved out of the cities, moved out into the country.
Oh, that sounds like Al-Qaeda.
So,
Sounds Al Qaeda-ish. You planted something secret out there? Planning? Got evil firearms?
I plead the fifth.
How dare you, boy? You must hate the government.
I'm getting to be that way.
What makes the grass grow? The government. What makes the water rain? The government.
Also, you would ask, or you were trying to figure out who it was that said, we make money the old-fashioned way, we earn it. That was Smith Barney.
Yes, Smith Barney, we make money the old-fashioned way, we steal it.
We print it at the Federal Reserve.
So, hey, I just wanted to thank you for opening my eyes. It's been about 6 months now, so it was pretty quick, and so I thank you.
Sean, good to have you listening to the show. Anything else? I appreciate. I mean, what's the economy like in Minnesota overall?
You know,
Bob, you keep wondering why your phone's ringing. It's because you don't turn it off.
I know, I don't.
You just leave it on, and oh, it rang again. Right.
Nobody ever calls me, Alex. That's the thing. Well, they just wait till I'm on the show.
I guarantee you, it's people calling up wanting you to plug stuff on the show.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Food prices are going up. Gas is. Let's see, that's I think $2.97 or $2.79 right now. So, but I was looking at the oil price of crude oil and. I remember Lindsey Williams, you had him on a couple of months ago talking about gas going, or oil going to $50 a barrel.
Everything he said happened. In fact, get Lindsey Williams back on the show. Write that down. I know Trey's having a meeting across the street with the guys.
I'm glad you mentioned the new weapon from Taser, the crowd control. I looked at that, showed that to my wife and my brother-in-law.
But if anybody dies when they happen to get shocked with it, it has nothing to do with the electricity.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a new phenomenon.
Or the bullets they can shoot out of a 12 gauge now too, effective at 100 yards.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Well, thanks for what you're doing, Alex, and keep up the good work.
You bet. Yeah, that's the threat continuum. You know, one person got out of line at a demonstration. Now we get to shower the whole crowd, including women with baby strollers and infants, with taser bullets.
And don't forget the new preferred method of suicide, wrapping yourself with duct tape and jumping in the lake. Don't forget that.
And slicing your whole body up.
Right. Don't forget that. That's the new preferred. It's obviously a suicide, right?
Here in Austin.
I mean, you know, there's some new stuff going on out there. That's one of them.
Everything's fine. Let's talk to Eddie in California. Eddie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling, sir. What's on your mind?
It's funny you guys were talking about these toll roads. I traveled extensively throughout China, and in the town I was staying, farm town, they actually built a toll road for between the city where the farmers went to and sold their goods and that town. So, of course, the farmers didn't like it because
they're with Al-Qaeda. Anybody who doesn't like what the government's doing is with Al-Qaeda.
Well,
it needs to be tasered.
Actually, since I do go to China, I am a communist, so... You know,
you're against the bankers taking over, so you're a communist.
I'm against the bankers, yes, I'm a communist. Exactly. As a matter of fact, every time I come back through customs, they always ask me what I was doing in China. Very suspicious.
Well, if you're a communist, that means you're going to vote for Obama, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
But anyway, the difference there, because people are living with pennies anyway, you know? I mean, the dollar means if someone's going to eat or not. I mean, this toll road literally, took that away. So these farmers literally went out with torches and pitchforks, went to the toll booth where, like, the police station, a little police station was set up and all of that, and burned it down and ran all the police and military out of there. And nothing happened to them.
Well, let me break this down. In China, in Beijing, they put up a few hundred cameras last year, and the public just climbed the poles and tore them down, and the cops couldn't do anything. And there are videos all over YouTube shot by camera phones where it'll show people with pitchforks and hammers and rakes attacking police that are shooting them with machine guns. And the people overrun them, kill them, burn out the police station, and all over China. In fact, there's maps online. There are whole cities and towns taken back by the people. And they'll try to have the army march in, and they'll basically say no. So, yes, they are more spirit of 1776 than we are.
I'm not saying, that's right. But I'm saying, too, what I don't understand is how the bankers are going to bankrupt us, take away the middle class, expect us not to start paying attention.
Well, we're trained to grovel to the government. The Chinese have always rebelled. That's why Mao and the CIA funding, they tricked them into getting behind kicking out Chiang Kai-shek, which our government did, while telling the public we were for Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists. Here, I have to tell you, we are domesticated.
We got something more important than that, though. See, that's the deal. We got football.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas beat OU, so everything's all right. Oh, you may be going into a depression.
Did you hear it was even on the local news, hundreds of cars, they would wave them into parking lots and tell them free parking and then tow them all. See, everything's going corrupt.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, the Chinese don't have football, so they got nothing to distract their
Yeah, so what? We'll probably all be homeless and have no future, and they're building FEMA camps, but them Cowboys, now they lost.
Boy, they screwed up, didn't they? Well, I tell you what.
I tell you what, boy, yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do today.
Yeah, but my Longhorns.
My manliness ain't feeling too good
but
right
now. My Longhorns won, and I like that. I hate to admit it, but
Hey,
just because you're fighting the New World Order doesn't mean you can't watch a football game
All right, listen.
A while.
Eddie, I appreciate your call. Take care. Jimmy in Arkansas. Jimmy, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Jones. I want to touch on that, this martial law.
Hey, hold on a second. Dacey.
What?
You're going to, no. I've never, you know, that went over, Dacey, control yourself.
I didn't say that on air.
Yeah, you did. Anyways, look, this is out of control. You know what? I screw around with you and I get in a joking mood. Let's get serious here. Serious time. Sorry, caller. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, I just want to touch on this martial law business. That I'll be honest with you, I've got a lot of friends that are in the military, and I'm a vet myself. And I think in the long run, it's not going to work. On the simple fact, I've talked to a few of them that are still in the military, and I brought up the point to them. And, you know, there's scuttlebutt going on in the military about this martial law. Some of them, you know, are over here, you know, getting trained for it. But anyway, I've asked them a question. That okay, if you're detached and they send you off over to say Oakland, California, and you're herding all these people around and putting them in FEMA camps and all this kind of thing, what's to say that there's not another bunch out of Kentucky back in your hometown doing the same thing to your mom, dad, brothers, sisters, whatever that you're doing to people out there in California?
No, that's it. And the Soviet Union, the Nazis, that's how it's all done. And they actually have public plans to do that. And they signed a deal this year. They really signed it 7 years ago, but they made it public earlier this year. It was in the news without Congress. Congress said, we weren't involved in that. Why weren't we notified? You know, that's our authority. Used to, the Congress had to even commission an officer. You know, the executive couldn't even pick the officers because an executive might try to set up martial law by putting his officers in. So separation of powers, Congress had to do that. Well, here was the Canadian, Mexican, and U.S. generals signing a North American Union pact to fight terrorists and for civil unrest. But here's the problem. They're not just going to send people out of Kentucky into Northern California, or people from Texas into Minnesota, or vice versa, or from Florida to, you know, to Georgia or whatever. They're not just going to do that. What they're doing is they are going to create an economic implosion where through hyperinflation, they're not going to increase the size of the welfare check or the Social Security check, and people aren't going to have jobs on top of it. And so even if they still get the checks, they won't be able to buy what they need, so the rioting will start, and we'll see news images of scum stealing TVs, shooting firemen, as they've been caught doing before, and then it'll be legitimized, and the troops will say, well, things are breaking down, we've got to do it, we saw that in New Orleans. So see, this is going to be done psychologically, where the military is going to be seduced into going along with it. What's your take on that from Arkansas, Jimmy?
Well, I think that might work to a point, but you're still going to have this problem of just out and out, you know, one American turning on another one, irregardless, you know. The military, you're common, okay, they've been called every derogatory name in the book over the years, dog faces, everything else, but when it comes right down to it, your average ground pounder, they're not stupid by any stretch of the imagination. And they're going to be able to figure out that somebody, somewhere down the line, has gave an illegal order. And under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, they are not obligated to follow an illegal order.
Well, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. And again, I'm not playing devil's advocate. I'm saying how they're going to sell it, how they are selling it to the public. And,
well, I don't think that they'll ever be able to overcome is just your out-and-out conscience. And trying to pit one American against another American, just to be pitting them against it, that'll work for a while, you know, because you're going to have a honeymoon period where it's all new and exciting and yada yada. But after a while, it's going to start wearing on them. And
no, I hear you, but I'm going to skip this break for PrisonPlanet.tv subscribers watching on PrisonPlanet.tv and people listening on the InfoWars exclusive streams. For everybody else, we'll be back in 4 minutes. Stay there. Because Jimmy, I'm going to continue having this talk with him. We'll come back, go to Matthew, David, Ahmed, Ryan, and others. We're already under martial law. We're talking about hot martial law. Okay, we're going to go ahead and skip that break, John. Thank you. My point is, what they're going to do is, Jimmy, and the military needs to know this now. They are going to stage strategic televised killings of troops trying to get food to rioting people. There are also regular scum out there who, every time there's riots, who shoot the firemen and police. You're going to have them as well. And so those incidents, just like in Seattle, they had all the riot police, the Delta Force and the feds, hired 50 thugs through a foundation. They let them attack police. The low-level cops didn't know what was happening. They pointed out, though, that they weren't allowed to arrest them. Then the 50 anarchists retired to a government-paid-for building under police guard, and the national news said, look, now the anarchists are going to be attacked by the police. You know, they waited today while the public said, somebody's got to do something here. Somebody's got to stand up to these anarchists breaking out windows and attacking cops and doing all of this. And so then the cops were turned loose on the peaceful 60,000 people, beat old ladies with clubs, attacked them, went into neighborhoods, went into businesses. So it's the psychology. They're going to stage attacks on troops in the first stages of physical hot martial law, not judicial or legislative or executive martial law through the courts, through corruption, you know, this incremental, but real martial law. They're going to stage events to psychologically get the military behind all of this. So how do you respond to that?
Well, you got a good point there, a good valid point, but in this day and age, okay, you stop and think about this has been brought up repeatedly, all these cameras running around. Let's go back to that deal with you and this Michelle Malcolm. They sat there and they said that you did this, that, and yada, 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 and you didn't do that. And everybody and their dog anymore has some sort of video device, whether it be their cell phone or their Kodak digital camera or whatever. Somebody is going to get a picture of something somewhere.
You know what? I agree with you, and that's the answer. We just had to. We have to war game this out. Tell you know, like wargaming a chess game, what their moves are going to be in this war game, so we know how they're going to run the psychological warfare operation on the public, the military, the police, and everybody. And I agree with you, just like in Montebello earlier this year, when we caught them and it ended up coming up on national news, but the Patriot Movement caught police dressed like anarchists, attacking cops, staging their arrests, them being released, and the police had to admit they staged it. In Seattle, we exposed it was staged. In other parts of the world, and so now people know and are looking for that. And you're right. In Minnesota, they caught the cops staging some stuff. So you're right that the cat is out of the bag. So I agree with you. Last question for you, unless Bob has any for you, Jimmy, from Argus.
I just wanted to say that that's what the info war is all about, isn't it, Alex? That's why you're sitting there.
Well, the main war is getting people to know history and know how these controllers operate so that we're not telling people what to think. We're teaching people how to open their eyes up and analyze things for themselves, because light of day will bring this new world order down. But finishing up, Jimmy, you say scuttlebutt. I mean, they admit they're training the military, they're training the police for urban warfare, for domestic suppression of the population. You say you talk to people in the military that say, yes, it's going on. What do they think when they read the Boston Globe saying it isn't going on? I mean, doesn't that add to this, that the media is lying about it?
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot of faith in mainstream media at all, because, you know, I've got a son in Iraq, somewhere over there. I worry about him every day. And it makes me sick on a simple fact. He's over there in Iraq under the same guise that I was over in Vietnam, you know, and it sucks. Yeah, you know, there ain't no other way to put it. Sorry about using that phrase on your radio, but anyway,
Hold on, we're coming back to the full audience. Repeat that and expand on air. Here we go.
Today, alone on a hill, the man with the food.
We were just talking to Jimmy in Arkansas. He was in Vietnam, his son's in Iraq, and he was saying what he doesn't like is that the same criminal syndicate that was over him in Vietnam is over his son. And, you know, that's the paradox here. The courage of the men and women in uniform, the hell they go through, and what do they get? They get their medical treatment cut. The vets are having their treatment cut that was promised to them. They're shot up with all these experimental vaccines. Finish up your point, Jimmy.
Now, anyway, the military doesn't really buy into mainstream media. You know, they'll sit there and like you said earlier, that, you know, they'll deny that, oh, there's not any real urban training going on here or there or anywhere else, but when it's actually caught on somebody's private video device and they put it like on YouTube or Google or whatever, or put it in a blog on their personal website for the whole world to see, you know, it kind of throws a lot of egg in mainstream media's face. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the mainstream media, everything that they say is a lie, because, you know, it's not. There's some stuff that they, you know, they're accurate on. But they're really, really good at deception.
Well, I mean, obviously, most of what they say is true, so that they can then trick you with a little bit of disinfo on key subjects they put out.
Yeah, you know, you tell a whole lot of truth and throw in a couple of three, you know, lies, you know, it's kind of hard to sort out what's fact and what's fiction.
Yeah, it creates a haze of not knowing.
Well, I'll say that, you know, in their defense of the mainstream media, they are very, very good at sports scores, and they're not too bad at weather.
Well, see, they're not lying about those things.
That's right.
But here's the deal.
Spin everything else. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's not even lying most of the time. It's spinning. Or it's lying by omission. I mean, here's the thing. I'd go to an urban warfare drill in Temple, or an urban warfare drill in California, an urban warfare drill somewhere else, and I would witness the troops training for America on video, saying, where are you from? I'm from San Francisco. Where'd you get the gun? Where'd you get the... And then I'd see Marines doing real checkpoints with police helping them arrest people. And then I'd come back, and then I'd be at the event, and I'd see CNN there, and I'd watch the CNN report, and they'd say, the Marines were doing urban warfare drills for Central Asia in the future, and of course for Macedonia. And in a way it's true, because it's dual use training, but it was, the main function was for the United States. So see, that's how you know they're lying, because we just showed people the video of what the Marines were actually saying.
Same thing happened here in Austin today in the local paper, that Campbell thing I'm talking about. They discussed it, but they brought up some other non-issue, and they left alone the big one. They lie by omission.
Yeah, they'll talk about, oh, the Campbell board is meeting to discuss the future of this little side issue, right, and they never discuss it's about tolling roads they swore they wouldn't toll.
Right. They lie by omission. They bring up something minor. They won't cover the stuff that matters, and therefore, hey, you keep sucking up the mainstream media, you keep getting fed garbage.
Hey, listen, anything else you want to add, Jimmy?
Yeah, I would. It's a little off the subject, but this is just mainly for the listeners. But, you know, okay, I'm disabled. There's not a whole lot I can do in the movement, but what little I do, I make a lot of DVDs. For God's sake, do that and pass them out. And also, you can get on the internet, bookstore, wherever, and you can get these little pocket copies of the Constitution of the United States. Buy as many of them as you can and pass them out freely and get people to understand that that is what they're...
We didn't hang up on you, sir.
John.
Oh, he's back. Okay, go ahead. No, I... Yeah, Jimmy, your phone cut out for a minute. You're still there.
Oh, well, I was just saying, everybody, if they just pass out the DVDs like Loose Change and things like that in-game and get pocket... little pocket copies of the Constitution and pass those out freely and get people to understand that the Constitution still has clout. It has nothing to do with that. Patriot Act was just a bunch of garbage. The word will get out, and hopefully, I've changed a lot of minds myself. Like I said, I'm disabled. I can't do a whole lot, but I do everything that
Jimmy,
I can.
Jimmy, we got to run, but great point. Let me just add, and we're going to go to break and come back and try to hurry through calls a little bit faster. He just had a lot of interesting things to say. Matthew, David, Ahmed, Ryan, and others, and Bob Dacey's take on what's happening. We'll also plug his TV show and articles he writes before he leaves us. It's this. People say, what's the solution, Alex? We want a silver bullet. We want a magic thing that we can do that will change everything overnight. Okay, look in the mirror and realize you're the solution to the problem and get up off your butt and don't imagine some perfect solution. Little things together move mountains. Many hands make light work. And the public is finally listening. They're finally realizing they've been lied to. And so now the people are more receptive to the truth than ever. And so a lot of you that woke people up 10, 20 years ago but quit because some folks weren't listening, redouble your efforts now. Get Terror Storm, Endgame, my films. Make copies of them. Every video and book order we have at InfoWars.com, you get a free pocket constitution. We have them at cost, the little pocket constitutions, the Bill of Rights, Constitution, famous quotes, Declaration of Independence. Powerful stuff in there for those that still read. But bottom line, the will to fight, the will to think, the will to resist. This enemy's very unpopular. If we just stand up, they will fall. If not, they're going to win, and that's going to be hell on earth. We'll be right back. Bob, I just wanted to briefly get your take on taking action. Going back just a few, what's going on?
Well, I wanted to.
Well, you're pointing at something.
I just wanted to expand on what the caller just said about knowing your Constitution and how important it is. Well, you know, if you don't know what your rights are, how can you defend them, right? That's basic. But here, a classic example.
And the government can't say those rights are gone. If it does that, it's criminal, it's engaged in tyranny.
And when people can see it, here's a classic example. Now, people that don't like the Constitution are going to think I'm all wet. But if you go read Article 1, Section 7, for example, which most people don't know what that is, it says very plainly that when it comes to generating revenue, only the House of Representatives can generate a revenue bill. That's what it says. It's very simple to read. It says only the House of Representatives can generate a revenue bill. Now, the Senate can tack on to it, but the House has to generate it. Well, what happened in the bailout? The House rejected it. There was nothing for the Senate to discuss. But what they do, they take the bill over to the Senate. They load pork all over it, another $150 billion worth of revenue generation stuff. And then they sent it back to the House, and then...
And it was a bill that didn't pass the House.
That didn't pass the
House. It was
illegal. So the Senate...
It was martial law.
What I'm saying is the Senate...
Martial law is when the regular rules and laws are suspended.
The Senate generated revenue bills. That's what the $150 billion worth of extra pork was, generated in the Senate. If you read the Constitution, you'll know that it's totally illegal. And that's what we're talking about. You need to know what your rights are in order to defend them.
Okay, let me go back to my other question. I thought you were pointing at something across the room. You were like pointing over there, and I was like, what is it? Is there like a bug going up the wall or something? Solutions. If all of us individually get involved and do little things, i.e. the most important, you have to wake the public up first to the New World Order, then they can make real decisions and understand the real price to be paid and the enemy we're up against. But if they still think the two parties matter and still believe any part of this paradigm, you know, the public now doesn't trust the media or trust the mainstream media or the government, but they don't have any idea just how bad it is. Bob, tell briefly, and then I want to go to calls, your story, how you woke up and what you've been able to do.
Well, you know, what I've been able to do, gosh, you want me to brag on myself? Okay, Google Bob Dacey on the internet and you'll find out what I've
been able to do. But it's an example of what one person waking up and taking action.
Okay, you know, years ago, I was a conservative Republican type, and I was a good boy. I was a soccer coach and everything, state champions, the whole nine yards, you know. I was literally minding my own business. And I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. I just didn't know what it was. And then one day I was sitting at home and I was watching cable access TV for some strange reason, and up pops this nutcase punk, some punk about 24 years old, named Alex Jones. I didn't know who the heck he was. He was sitting there ranting and raving about the United Nations taking over the national park system, and I was like, this guy's a nut, but I love his delivery style, so I'm going to listen to him. So I listened to him and I thought, okay, this guy's he needs to be taken off to the bunny farm. And then he changed the subject, started talking about the Second Amendment, and I said, oh, I got to hear this guy. And so then this Alex Jones character started to succinctly, precisely, accurately, historically describe the purpose, the history of everything in the Second Amendment perfectly. And I was going, okay, wait a minute. This set up cognitive dissonance in my feeble brain, and I'm going, how could he be an idiot about this UN thing taking over the national parks and be so 100% right on the Second Amendment? So I got off of my chair, went to my computer, and started researching what Alex Jones, said about the United Nations Biodiversity Treaty and taking over the national parks.
You found out Congress had tried to block it, that the Kentucky legislature...
Right. I found out that the Kentucky state legislature had passed a resolution the previous year explaining it, condemning it, saying that there was two of these areas in Kentucky that the UN was trying to take over, and they didn't want foreign minions in control of Kentucky land. And this was a land, this was a earth-shattering event for me, because I was staring at my computer screen. I was saying, everything that nut told me about was right, and I'm mad because I didn't know about it. I keep up. I read the papers. I follow current events. And so this opened that little crack of light into my brain, and then all of a sudden everything started to grow. And by the time I actually met you, it was so funny, your guy that ran your audio board for you at KJFK on Saturdays worked for me. Turned out. I was saying, who's this Alex Jones?
This KJFK
character?
Was like 200 yards from your hardware store.
Yeah, it's just right down the street. And I was like, do you know this Alex Jones guy? And he says, yeah. I said, why do you know him? Well, I run an audio board for a Saturday show on KGFK. I said, you got to be kidding. And he said, no. I said, well, is that guy for real? And he said, well, he thinks he is. You know. And so I said, bring him in here. I want to meet him. And so a few days later, he came in there with you in tow into my store. And we went back into my office.
I was in there to sell you on a sponsorship.
Yeah, I don't know what you were trying to do, but that didn't happen at that time. We didn't even talk about a sponsorship. I'd been doing research myself at that time, and I found out that in my son's senior-level high school government book, they were teaching him that the Second Amendment doesn't exist, that it doesn't mean what it says. And I showed that to you, and you said, you mind if I borrow this? You know, I said, here, go right ahead. And then the next day, you were on the radio with it, reading it and blasting it and correcting it, and I was thinking...
No, it said, contrary to popular belief, the Second Amendment is only for an armed government militia, the National Guard, and Army. No one is allowed to own guns. And then I went on air and pointed out, well, we didn't get the National Guard until 1906.
Absolutely. So, my point is that when you did that, and I was listening to your radio show at the time, another little light came into my dense brain that said, media power. Wow, this is interesting. I find out something, I give it to Alex Jones, boom, it goes all over the city. And now here it is 10 years later, it's going all over the world.
Well, station went from Dallas all the way to San Antonio.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. So, you know, you and I have had this very good relationship over the last 10
years. But then you went and got an access show.
Yeah, the next year I stumbled into an access show. It's called The Simple Truth. And, you know, we just finished our ninth year, and we're trying to get back on the air again for our 10th year. We're having, you know, paperwork problems. But we'll be back. And historically, it's been at 6 o'clock here on Channel 10, you know, on Time Warner Cable. And we've also got a website
and,
now.
And then you started writing for The New American, which reaches millions.
Yeah, I wrote a couple of articles for The New American, and my producer of my show, Kelly Taylor, she is the official writer for The New American on the Trans-Texas Corridor and after Superhighway issue. Several articles out. And so, you know, last year, we were the ones that blew the cover off TxDOT's scheme to toll the interstates. I mean, that was us. And
we're now close to defeating that because you took action to ferret it out. So there you go, folks. Pick your issue. Fight the New World Order. You can take action. Let's go to let's go quick here. Who's up next? I got to move fast now. Matthew in New York, you're on the air. Oh, I had a call from Costa Rica and I didn't go to it. Ryan,
hey,
call
Alex.
Back in. I'll go to you. But yeah,
Alex.
Yeah, go ahead.
Alex, hey, it's Matthew.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, hi, Bob. Hey, Bob. I never would have guessed you were a good old boy, you know, based upon your Longhorn affinity, huh? go masculine tribes.
You can be... You look, when I was a kid, I grew up in the shadow of that tower, okay? I lived and breathed UT football. That's all I cared about when I was a kid. That tribal thing gets in you. When I went to UT, I went there for 4 years, and when I was there, we never beat those sorry Okie sons of a guns. And so you get it in your system, and then all of a sudden, when the game is on, that tribal thing comes back, and all of a sudden, I hate the Okies. Just for a little while. And
all right, but let's get off the tribal brainwashing.
Okay.
All right.
It's okay. 45-35.
Alex, let me ask you a quick question here. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theory. I get all the information from their white papers and the primary source material, just like you do, and that's why I appreciate it, because you don't go off on the tangents. You know, you try and wake people up with 9/11 just by focusing on World Trade Center 7, the economy, just what the Constitution specifically states, who can print money, et cetera. And, you know, it's funny, because my call was all about, you know, where is the solution? You know, where are we going to find the solution? Well, in my opinion, it's too late, because a lot of people I know are waking up, you know, either through your videos or just through me giving them the primary source materials or their white papers, and they realize that, hey, you know, we're being shafted here. And, you know, like you've stated before, you know, the governors are on the payroll, the state legislatures are on the payroll, the local people are on the payroll, and it's getting to a point now where, you know, what else is there left for us to do? I mean, how much more information do we need to find out about that they're completely shafting us?
Well, you know all about it. Hold on. You know all about it, but the general public still doesn't know all of it or even a lot of it or even a little bit of it. They know they're being lied to. They know there's a tyranny, but they don't have the details. And so it's up to you to carry the ball, to use a football analogy, and to get out there and wake them up, sir. I mean, if it isn't going to be you, it's going to be nobody.
No, and I understand that, Mr. Jones, but my concern is as follows. I mean, they've already done the damage they need to do. I mean, here you have a private banking consortium that is basically raping, you know, solvent companies. You have people that are in power that are keeping other people on a low conscious brainwave state. So even though you're waking people up, you know, bit by bit, you know, we know the damage is done, and we've gone through the regular process of stating, hey, listen,
no, we tell them that cell phones are frying their brains, quit using them as much. We explain that TV with the flicker rate and the different images and the subliminals is mesmerizing them. That's mainline science, that you go into a dream state, a waking dream state. You educate them about that. I mean, look, things are bad, but all we can do is fight back against it. I guarantee if we weren't fighting back against it, it'd be a lot worse.
No, and I agree with you 100%.
Here's an example. They already meant by this year to have, what, 9 major Austin roads in the city be toll roads. They've only got, like, 1 and a couple outside. I mean, we've held back 90% of their crap. That's one microcosm example.
Here's another one. You got the North American Union, right? You got the North American Union. Their deal was to have it done by the end of 2005. Guess what? We screwed them up. We're making a difference.
Everywhere it's falling apart. But, I mean, I know... What are you saying? I'm trying to
what
get
What I'm
at.
Saying is, I mean, the writing on the wall is already there. I mean, just the last month and a half of just the events that's going on, just with the Federal Reserve, for instance.
Yeah, but as the tyranny unfolds here, Bob, you got a cough button right there. Let me show you. You just hit that when you need a cough, and it won't be as long. As the tyranny unfolds, everything we said is coming true. Our credibility goes up. It's a fight, sir. And look, I appreciate your call. I know stuff's bad, but, you know, I need to get to all the calls, and I just can't sit here and put out gloom and doom. I mean, people think I gloom and doom. I'm just breaking down what the enemy plans to do, and all I know is we have to fight it. Now, let's go ahead and play that Lou Dobbs clip. It's only about a minute and a half long of them talking about the North American Union. Here it is.
Again. The fight against the North American Union is escalating.
What happened with that clip?
The fight against the North American Union is escalating, not at the federal level, but at the state level. Currently, 14 states are considering legislation opposing what the administration calls the Security and Prosperity Partnership. In Idaho, the measure has been approved by both houses of its legislature because Idaho is tired of the secrecy. In a simple statement from one of the Senate sponsors, he explains, quote, Idaho wants Congress to weigh in on this and get it out in the open and vote on it. At the federal level, it's hard to escape the push for unifying Canada, Mexico, and the United States. The language is everywhere, even though the people have never voted on it. In last year's failed so-called comprehensive immigration reform bill, the Senate inserted language praising the North American Union for progress made, quote, in developing and implementing an immigration security strategy for North America that works towards the development of a common security perimeter. In other words, gone are the borders of the United States of America. Welcome to the borders of North America. It's a far cry from what's happening at the state level.
The state activity is an indication of the grassroots concern about this issue. The states are closer to the grassroots, and that's where you're going to first see the indication of some discomfort with the Security Prosperity Partnership or the idea of a North American Union.
Washington isn't listening, just as Washington has ignored the people on the issue of immigration. Bill Tucker, CNN, New York.
Okay, so, and I want your comment on this briefly, Bob, and I want to get to all these calls. David and Ahmed and Scott and Aaron and everybody else, and Ryan's back from Costa Rica. We'll go to him first, actually. I don't think I've ever had I've had a few calls from Costa Rica. Kind of like have a map on the wall of all the calls I've gotten. McMurtle Weather Station, Antarctica, places like that. You listen to that. The feds come in. They sign all the documents. We're going into North American Union. There are lawsuits for 4-year documents. Judicial Watch gets them. It's all happening. The public documents say NAU, and the feds keep denying it and saying it doesn't exist, and the states are waking up and saying, look, you're liars. It's coming into our states. We're saying no. So, see, once the government's exposed as being illegitimate and a pack of criminals bought and paid for by foreign banks, they lose all legitimacy. They're now illegitimate. And they lose public support and acquiescence. And they can only go so far with the tyranny when the people and the system start saying no. Okay, the word has to get out that crooks are running things, and they're only going to make things worse because they're totally ruthless. We are winning. The North American Union is exposed. The people that were told it didn't exist now know the media lied. Okay, I mean, when CNN and Fox came out and said the Trans-Texas Corridor didn't exist, as billboards were going up in Texas, as the governor was announcing it, that woke everybody up in Texas right there. This level of lying is going to backfire. Bob Dacey.
And, you know, another example of that, last year when the Nation magazine came out with that big front page article that said that the North, you know, that the Trans-Texas Corridor was real, but the NAFTA Superhighway was something that we nutty conspiracy theorists just made up. When they went out with public with that thing, we counterattacked them immediately. Heck, I was doing your show when that happened. And what happened when the guy that wrote the article was on the Washington Journal, every call he got was blasting him because they were calling him a liar.
Yeah, it was over 90%.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. He was sitting there trying to defend his ridiculous article,
folks,
for which there was no defense.
Folks,
we are winning this.
Folks, we are winning the hearts and minds. We need to have a winner's attitude. It's a tough road to go up, but it's the only road we got. We got to kick butt here, folks. Let's go to Ryan in Costa Rica. You're on the air, Ryan.
Alex, it's an honor to be on. I've been listening for years. These times right now, I figured I had to call in and talk to you. I won't even bother asking you how you're doing right now. I know the United States is under complete attack, and I can't even sleep right now. I'm just paying such close attention, listening to all 4 hours of your show every single day, doing all the research, and just trying to find solutions like you're saying. In contrast to that last caller, I think it's not true. I think really what I'm noticing right now is people are asking me what I've been telling them for years. They're like, what you told me is true. It's coming true. Things are happening, like you said, and I'm finding that people are so open to the information right now. It's like, this is the time.
Exactly, and so many people in the reality movement, the awakening movement, the liberty movement, the history movement, people that study history, a lot of us have bad attitudes. Nobody cares. Nothing we can do. It's all over. Meanwhile, it's the greatest awakening ever. We need to maximize everything right now. The internet may not be here soon in its current form. They're openly trying to get rid of it. We need to use it while we've got it.
And watching Riddles and Stone last night and just realizing that these people have a true plan for what they're trying to do to us, and they are working 24 hours a day against us. We got to wake up and work 24 hours a day against them and send out mass emails to everybody. Everyone needs to watch the free videos. And just, I've got one that I spent 6 hours making last night just to make it really nice and beautiful that people will look at it, hopefully, and click on articles where mainstream media is saying that Paulson is a dictator, that we are giving over all of our power to the banks, and that the Federal Reserve is private. People are finally realizing it in mainstream
America. By the way, we ended up getting that video clip from last week. A caller called in with the audio where they call in one of the heads of the World Bank and say the Federal Reserve is private. And the guy goes, no, it's not. It's federal.
Oops.
All right. Listen, yeah. I appreciate your call from Costa Rica. We're out of time. Final segment coming up. I'm going to skip for the PrisonPlanet.tv viewers and the listeners at to Infowars.com on those streams. I'm going to skip this break. But for everybody else, I forgot the big announcement that I forgot to do last hour. Big announcement when we come back just briefly. Big announcement about a Wednesday guest for 2 hours. This is going to make for some really informative and compelling radio. Okay, Bob, continue with the calls here. Who's up next here, John, in order?
Ahmed in New York.
Ahmed in New York. You're on the air, sir. Go ahead, Ahmed. You're on the air.
How's it going, Mr. Jones, Mr. Dacey? It's an honor to be on the show.
Honored to talk to you, Ahmed. What's on your... Go ahead.
I'm here from New York, and I basically have a two-part question. The first part being, obviously, what is some advice on how we can warn people living in major cities like New York City? Obviously, the movement is strong, and the word of truth is getting out there. So as far as like major cities... besides the idea of piling food and hoarding those type of things, what type of things should we expect to see?
Well, I would tell you, if it goes into a full-bore breakdown type depression, the worst places to be are in megacities, the metropolises, like L.A., New York, Chicago. There is nowhere worse than Manhattan. You're not in Manhattan, are you?
Well, I'm in Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, so you're across the water then?
Right.
Well, that's not as bad because at least you're tied into the mainland there. You know, just keep wake up your friends, family, and neighbors. That way the public won't spy, won't tattle. We're together. They're going to see you're going to get food and shelter. If you tattle on people, the feds are already saying that. Same stuff that the Nazis and the communists did. I mean, it's hellish. I'm not going to lie to you. They plan to bring us into full depression, full martial law to squeeze us and teach us to love them. Where you know, oh, save me, government. They want to social engineer everybody.
And I would say also stay away from big crowds and don't throw rocks at banks. You know, good idea.
Mm. Yeah, like the hired anarchists do. Not all anarchists, the hired ones do, so they have a pretext to attack peaceful crowds.
Yeah, just don't do anything stupid. Don't give them don't give them an excuse. Stay away from crowds.
Unless you're out trying to wake people up.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, the violent crowds, you know.
Talking about during martial law.
Yeah, don't be doing that because then you're going to be a sound cannon fodder.
What's going to happen is they're going to turn these sound cannons on, and somebody's going to end up pulling out a rifle, and that sound cannon's going to go down real fast, which is and then the war starts. And I don't want that, Bob, but
absolutely
I think you're going to end up – I think hell's going to blow up.
And a whole bunch of civil disobedience on the part of the police and on the part of the military. Just kind of go through the motions and don't do what they tell you because that's patriotism.
You think that's going to happen?
I think it's going to happen. A lot of the police, a lot of the military are going to say – I'm not going to participate in this garbage because I got kids, I got grandkids, and I want a future for America. And I think a lot of the police are just going to just kind of go through the motions and say, we're not participating.
All right, Ahmed, I got to jump. I appreciate your call. We're going to come back and talk to Scott, Aaron, and Dick, and that's going to be it in the final segment here. Here we go, back to the full audience. Okay, remember, I haven't even plugged my videos this whole show other than saying get them, make copies of them. They're the best films out there, in my opinion. Terror Storm, I think, is the best film on government-sponsored terrorism and exactly who we're dealing with. Some of the other sponsors that make this show possible, eFoodsDirect.com, big banners at the top of InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. It is the longest continually operating storable foods company in the nation, and they're just great folks. And so we really hope that everybody will check out eFoodsDirect.com, get a free brochure, a free audio CD about the great storable foods that they have, high quality, with all the uncertainty that we're living under. It is more important than ever to be self-sufficient, and that's my message for people going into these trying times. Have food, have firearms. Don't go out offensively looking for trouble, but protect yourself. 800-409-5633, 800-409-5633, or eFoodsDirect.com. And then lastly, a Cola Blue are these great atmospheric water generators. They just grab the water out of the air, sends it through five different filters. We have links up on InfoWars.com to Ecola Blue. It's spelled ECOLOBLUE.com, EcolaBlue.com, or give them a call, 866-585-4044, 866-585-4044. Atmospheric water generator, 7.5 gallons a day, five different filters it goes through. EcolaBlue.com, banner on InfoWars.com. Let's jam in here. I guess Scott in Arizona is up next.
Hey, Alex, how are you, buddy?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
To find out how, I mean, I didn't get to catch all your show today, but how long do you think, I know they got the points up 700 or the plus right now, how long do you think that'll last before it drops back down again?
I think it'll last 2 weeks, maybe a month, then it's going to start plunging again. They'll say we need even more power, more infusions, more nationalization, more imperial power for the banks, but that's not what's going to matter. People are obsessing on their pension funds. When they cash it out, it won't matter because it's going to be in devalued dollars. So it's the hyperinflation that's going to kill us, and that's already here, but it's going to intensify in the next 24 months. I mean, it's going to be just unbelievable.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now let's go ahead and go to another caller. Let's talk to Aaron in Idaho. Aaron in Idaho, you're on the air.
Alex, it's great to hear from you. I love your show, number one. The timing couldn't be better for my call. I'm all about solutions and versus problems. And I believe that what we need to focus on here is everything you're presenting is the orientation of consciousness on the solutions. Well, what's the solution? The solution is unity, getting everybody together on the same page. Now, I think that we have reached a sort of a critical mass of people, because I know that everybody I talk to out there has some sort of an inclination or feeling that something's not right. They know something's amiss. It's not just America. It's all over the world. So my, you know what, my thought is that what we've got to do is just focus our consciousness on the solution, which is coming together, and just hanging up our problem hats for a little bit until this election's over anyways, and get together, get everybody out there to vote for a third-party candidate. I don't care if it screws up the election. The bottom line here is a show of numbers, and when people across the world see that the United States have come together to in this big of numbers, they're going to jump on the bandwagon. They're going to wake up even more.
I appreciate your call. We got to be careful not to get into too much new agey stuff, because look at India, where they, you know, think positive, but everybody's basically sitting out in piles of crap on the side of the road.
Now it's on a conventional
basis. You know, all you Christians out there, I think it would help to pray too. Because we got,
well, I mean,
we
that's what he means. It's, you know, I mean, focusing on good, thinking of ideas, coming together. I agree with you, sir, but we also need to put those ideas into action. I'm sorry to Dick and a couple other callers. Call me back tomorrow, and you'll go to the head of the line. Bob Dacey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Alex. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Give out your website.
SimpleTruthOnline.net. SimpleTruthOnline.net. Go there.
SimpleTruthOnline.net. And if you live in Austin, Texas, you can see reruns of a show in the live show. You can check the TV guide and other information, and it's there once a week. All right, rebroadcast with the economic historian William Engdahl and others right at the start of the show. It was a really powerful broadcast today. Hope you'll join us in the rebroadcast only on the internet at InfoWars.com and stations across the country. God bless you.